Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Divs. Unfortunately, real life has still kept Cassidy and me from recording a new episode, so this week we'll be running another rerun, which is Horizon Forbidden West. Considering the timing of the Burning Shores DLC, I'm hoping that this works and tides us over until we can record a new episode, and we're hoping that's this week. So, for every one of you that has stuck with us through this, thank you. We really appreciate you. And without any further ado, let's get into this episode, and we hope to see you next week with a new one. Thanks, guys. Welcome back to our podcast. I'm Divs, and as always, I'm joined by my awesome co-host, Cassidy.
Hello.
And today, we are super excited to delve into a topic that we've been raving and ranting about for a couple of weeks now, at least. And that is Horizon Forbidden West, because this game released, I think, on February 18th, if I'm not wrong.
Yep, that's right.
Cass was lucky enough to get access to a PlayStation and play it. I have been following it on walkthrough, so there's going to be a slight difference, which is why the two of us are going to discuss this game. But since we've both basically seen the main story play out, she's played it, I've watched walkthroughs, but that's pretty much it. But let's get to it, Cass, because there's so much to talk about, and this game is just as amazing as its prequel, so let's talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. And I think what's so cool too is that it picks up literally like right after the events of the first game. It's, yeah, there's like about a 6 month break between the first game and the second game, or the 6 month time difference, really, not so much a break. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool to get to see these characters and get to kind of connect with them in the same way we did in the first game, and absolutely, to know that not like, you know, 30 years has passed in the interim. So that was really nice. And then also, I think the game just has a really compelling story and a really compelling protagonist, and it's so much fun to play as Aloy, and it's so much fun to like revisit this amazing world and get to see these new locations, encounter new machines, fight new enemies, and the world is still, you know, gorgeously animated and rendered, and so it was so much fun to get a chance to play in this world again and go on this amazing, crazy journey with Aloy.
Oh, absolutely, because let's talk about where we left Aloy off in Horizon Zero Dawn, because while she did defeat Hades, Gaia is still not complete. There's still that task left from the entire, because the biosphere is still dying, which means Gaia needs to be rebooted. And basically at this point, the thing here is that there is, because Gaia has not been rebooted yet, or she's still dying, the people of this world or this biosphere are now experiencing something called the Blight. So let's talk about that, because that's the main premise of this game, as we saw it in the promo material and stuff. So let's talk about that, because there's more to it, and we'll find out about that when the game progresses. But for now, let's talk about the Blight and what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, so after the events of the first game, I mean, like you said, Hades has been defeated but not destroyed, and so he's still kind of, or it, however you want to refer to it, is still out there existing. And the Blight is like this new emerging sickness / disease that's kind of ravaging the land, and it's not quite affecting people directly, but you know, it's impacting crops and resources and all of that. Yeah, so it's like people are starting to feel the effect of it. So Aloy initially starts out trying to find a way to kind of cure the Blight, because this is like a huge issue for them, really, and if they don't fix it, it's essentially going to mean the end.
Extinction again, like basically, because if you don't have food, or if the soil that you're growing your food in is rotten, nothing grows, you're going to starve. And that means the end for you, basically. So
Right.
and the only way to do that is to reboot Gaia. So you said there's a 6-month gap from Zero Dawn to Forbidden West, and this is very well explained, like, because Aloy's been looking for a copy of Gaia to basically reboot her. That's what she's been doing these past 6 months. And fortunately for her, she's been running into dead ends. And that's sad in and of itself, but I also kind of, I also, it's bittersweet how this game starts because of what we see, because of the dream that Aloy has. So let's talk about that because, oh my God, it's just, what a way to start, guys. I mean, come on.
Yeah, no, that was like a really moving and emotional scene to watch because we see her describing this recurring dream that she has, where she's meeting Elizabeth Sobeck, who's really the closest thing to a mother that Aloy has known, because Aloy, unfortunately, like we find out in the events of the first game, was not
Was
born. She was made.
She was made in
So,
Liz's image, basically.
right, yeah. So Elizabeth Sobeck is kind of like the closest thing that she really has to a mother, and especially in a society like the Nora, where Aloy grew up, and a tribe that prioritizes matriarchs and, mothers and things like that. It was a huge deal, and I think she always kind of longed for that sort
Oh,
of
she did, for
relationship
sure.
with somebody, for a number of reasons. But Liz is really like the only one that Aloy has, and she's been dead for like 1,000 years. So that like in itself is kind of moving. But then seeing the stream where like they're meeting and they're hugging, and then Aloy describes feeling whole for like a brief moment. But then unfortunately, when she wakes, it's a dream, and she's always alone. And so just the way they kind of framed that, and the way it was like
It
animated and all of
hurts.
that, it's
Yeah,
yeah,
it
it's very
hurts.
like, it's bittersweet because it's nice to see her have like this really sweet moment with Liz, even though we know it's a dream and it's never gonna happen. But yeah, the ending when she wakes up and she describes being alone and all of that, like that's like the sad part.
Yeah, for sure it is. And basically, that's where we meet her in this game, right? Because that we meet her right in the middle of her search for a copy of Gaia, basically, where she so that she can reboot the biosphere. And this is where we meet Varl. So let's talk about that because, oh my God, Varl is a wholesome character. We've known him in the first game. And I mean, come on, who doesn't love Varl? Let's talk about him.
I know, he's so wholesome. And yeah, it was really nice to see a familiar face so early on in the game. He's literally like introduced or reintroduced within like the opening few minutes. So it was great to see him again. But also, I just love that for him, this must be so new and different, because for the Nora, really leaving the sacred lands is kind of like taboo
Taboo.
almost, and it's not really done, except in a few rare cases. And Aloy is probably the most recent one, but in the last game at the end for the Battle of the Alight, a lot of Nora, well, maybe not a lot, but a few notable people at the least, did
Were
leave
made
the sacred
seekers
lands.
so they could go
And
to Meridian. Yeah, exactly. Correct.
right, so I'm sure this is all still new for Varl, even though he's been away from the sacred land, presumably for like around 6-ish months or so, give or take. But I love that he's still kind of like, he doesn't really seem fazed by it. He's just like, yeah, this is just like a regular Tuesday for me. Gotta go find Aloy. which
But
is what he
let's
does.
talk
I mean,
about that. It's what he does, but he's also like, dude, why'd you run away from your own celebration?
I mean, I think that's kind of, I don't want to say obvious, but I feel like having, as
No,
players,
I
having spent so
know.
much time with Aloy, I think we understand that
Oh, I
she's not
definitely
really
understand.
somebody
She's
who pays
not
attention.
yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right. It's just, I mean, you kind of laugh at it because, oh my God, these people are trying to honor her, and she's like, I don't need this, I don't need this. And she just has to book it from there as quickly as she can because she can't deal with it. It's a, I mean, I
Right.
think that's a side effect of, I think we've talked about this. I think it's a side effect of having been alone for so long and being isolated for so long. So suddenly being showered with attention by people and having someone to even help her out is kind of jarring to her, I guess. That's what I think might be the case. What do you
Yeah, I
think?
think it's definitely something that she's not used to. I think for so long, because she's been an outcast and because she's done most of the stuff she did for the first game, she did largely by herself. I think she's just not used to relying on other people, or wanting to, because I think in some ways it's easier when you can rely on yourself, because then you only have yourself to, like, to worry about. You don't have to worry about other people who are essentially like the other variables. And you don't have to worry about like their safety or their priorities and any of that. When it's just one person, when it's just you can do whatever you want to like meet certain goals or deadlines or whatever. And I think that's kind of how she's been.
That's how she's operated so far, basically.
But yeah, this game really kind of forces her to change
Change
that
that.
to a certain extent. So that was really nice to see that over the course of the game, even though she is probably more capable than everybody she meets, she still recognizes that, like, hey, I don't have to shoulder this entire thing solely by myself. Like, I can rely on my friends and my allies because that's what they're there for. So
That's
that
what
was a
they're
really
there
nice
for.
kind of journey to see her go
It's an
on,
interesting,
realizing that.
yeah, I definitely agree. I do. But let's talk about this because after running into dead end after dead end, it's like really frustrating for Aloy. But I also like seeing Val's perspective on getting a focus and seeing the world as Aloy does because that's like insane. So let's talk about that too.
Yeah, I mean, it was really cool that Aloy, she now at the start of the second game has like a whole bunch of spare focuses. And she's just like, she just gives Varl one. And I love again that he has like no hesitation. He just takes it. And there is, you do see him adjusting to it. And I think he's still looking at things a particular way. So like,
Oh
there's
yeah.
an early bit where they find like a promising lead that should take them to a copy of Gaia, and unfortunately ends up being like a dead end again. But he
Yeah.
does see a version of Gaia, like a decoy essentially. But even in seeing that, he's like kind of taken aback by it, and he's like, oh my god, the goddess. And so he's looking at it one way, and Aloy's like, there is no goddess. And she's kind of trying to show him, the truth, at least as far as what she
Or
knows.
the
So
practicality, or whatever, however you want to look at it, I
but I
guess.
mean, again, I just love that Varl, he's so wholesome, but also he doesn't ever kind of get upset at her for kind of, I guess dismissing his beliefs or whatever. He's
Exactly.
still like, I mean, I can't begin to imagine what you've seen, but like for me, this is how I can kind of make sense of this whole thing.
Yeah,
So I really
agreed.
liked that
That's
he
an
didn't
interesting
like snap at
perspective.
her or anything.
Yeah, that's a very interesting perspective. You're absolutely right because it's like, it can be so jarring for someone like Varl who's been used to Nora culture and how they view all these things to suddenly look at Aloy who's like, no, that's not what this is. But I mean, sure, if that's what you want to think. It's kind of interesting to see how that plays out. And we'll get to see more of that, well, not just with Varl, but with other characters that we meet too. But what I did find interesting is that Varl brought up a very interesting lead when this lead that she had came to a dead end. Silence. So let's talk about that because that leads to somewhere super interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think, unfortunate that they had to resort
I
to
know.
finding silence as a
No,
lead,
true,
but
very true.
unfortunately, this kind of change in tactic does serve as a catalyst for a lot of what's to come in the game. And so,
Oh,
yeah, they
for
do
sure,
decide,
dude.
they do seek out silence, and they decide they're going to get some information from him at the very least, because maybe they
Yeah.
can use him the way he's been using Aloy for like the
Yeah.
entirety of the first game.
For sure,
But
for sure.
unfortunately, Aloy has to kind of mop up more messes, because we find out that after the Battle of the Alight, the spire in Meridian has not been the
Been
same. It's been acting
quiet.
up, acting weird. And yeah, it's just, she kind of wanders into like another, like a mess not of her own making exactly, but like
For
one that she's kind of forced to clean, because she's the only one with like the tools and the knowledge and the skill to really do anything with
deal with
it.
it.
But
Exactly.
yeah, I think we talked a lot about how much of a jerk Silence was when we did
Oh
the
yeah, when we were
first
talking
when
about
we revisited
Zero
the first
Dawn.
game.
Exactly.
And I think this is like a really great moment when you can see that, because we find out at this moment that Silence did not, he intentionally gave Aloy his spear, but with a like almost like a defective kill switch that like neutralized Hades but didn't eliminate him, solely so that he could get Hades and like kind of pick Hades' brain and like extract information from him, and all of this in the pursuit of knowledge, which again is like that's a noble thing, but like you don't do that at the cost of like the world or other people or whatever. But Silence is like, you know, he's doing his own thing, he's got his own goals and his own motives, and it's like for him it's like knowledge is like the ultimate thing, and nothing, like nobody else is worth it, nothing else is worth it, there's, you know, nothing is too much as long as he's learning something from it and as long as he's gaining some sort of information. So part of the reason we as characters or as players have to go to the Forbidden West is because Silence has kind of left this coded message for Aloy and has been like, well, it took you long enough to figure this out, but if you want more information, come meet me in the Forbidden West.
I
And so now
know, which is
Aloy
so
has to like
condescending. Like, you know, F this dude, right? Like, no, you are a piece of work, sir. No, just no. Like,
Yeah, I mean, after everything, like
you've used
that's the last
her
thing.
every chance you got. You've literally used this child every chance you got, and now you're condescending to her. Like, dude, why? Why? Why would
Yeah,
you
it's,
condescend? Because like
I mean, I think that's just who he is.
everything that you learned is because she opened those pathways for you. So shut up and
Right.
stop condescending. I would literally just, it's just so annoying. I just can't put it to words. But you're absolutely right that it basically accelerates the plot or acts as a catalyst, basically, for her journey into the Forbidden West. So let's talk about that because I think the Forbidden West is beautiful. It's incredible. But
Is.
let's talk about the journey that she takes into the Forbidden West because why because the spire, as we know, is in Meridian. It's in Meridian. She talks to Avad, who tells her who tells her upon learning about this that there's an embassy there's an embassy happening at Baron Light, which is the gateway from Carja territory to the Forbidden West, and that's where she has to go. So let's talk about that, and let's talk about how she deals with leaving Meridian.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the thing that, like, from a game point of view, like, as a player, I understand why, you know, certain things have been written the way they are, but I just find it so funny that like people just kind of come up to Aloy with these problems and they're like, oh, well, you're the anointed, you're the savior, like you can do this, and they just expect her to like do things. But I mean, it's still a lot of fun to play through and like
Of
experience game,
course.
even though the bulk of the game might just be Aloy just cleaning up other people's messes and like dealing with their nonsense. But yeah, the embassy is like this big meeting that happens, I think, annually between the Carja and the
Karja,
Tanakh, which are the like I guess the original people that or the locals of the Forbidden West.
Forbidden West,
And
exactly.
yeah, the Tanakh, they have they've, you know, captured people during the Red Raids, which was, you know, of course, a horrible time. And so they usually exchange prisoners during the embassy, and the Carja exchange resources because, you know, the Carja have traded extensively and they have better resources than probably the some of the people in the Forbidden West have, like, you know, what the Tanakh might consider exotic resources. So
No,
every
true. Very
supposed to
true.
take place where they exchange like goods and people, and in order for Aloy to get to the Forbidden West, this embassy has to happen and she has to see it through, and then only then can she be granted safe passage through the Forbidden West. But leading up to that itself is like a whole trip. She journeys to this region called the Daunt, which is where it's essentially like the region leading up to Baron Light, which
But
is this
let's talk
last
about
Carja
how she
outpost.
gets there. This is, okay, because we know that up until now, Varl and Aloy are in Meridian. And Aloy's like, you know what? Let me decide to make use of Avad's hospitality a little bit, and she's like, we'll stay, but she ends up booking it in the middle of the night, leaving Varl behind. Again, a trait worthy of, I don't know what to say. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that was kind of like a, it was a funny but also kind of frustrating scene because again, like at this point, this is still kind of early in the game and Aloy's not stupid. I think she knows that like Varl is not really going to hinder her so much as help her. But I think again, because she's just so used to operating on her own and she spent literally like the first, few decades of her life being on her
Exactly.
own, I think she just finds it easier to just do things on her
Deal with
own
stuff on
and
her
not
own.
worry.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and like also if Varl comes with her, then she has to be mindful of his safety. Whereas when she's the only one, she can really do whatever she wants, and it doesn't matter if
Or
she's
take
getting into
risks,
something
like you said.
dangerous, right? It doesn't really matter what she does when it's only her because it's only her. But with a second person, whoever it is, then she has to be more mindful of like their safety and all of that. So I wonder if that's part of the reason why she leaves Varl. But at
Maybe.
any rate, she.
She books
She
it.
does,
She basically is like.
She books it, and poor Varl is just like he's like dead to the world for a few hours because he's fast asleep and he probably doesn't even notice. And so Aloy has a few hours head start on him, and she
To the
makes it a good
daunt.
distance, but yeah.
But you mentioned, okay, let's talk about the scenery because, oh my God, the developers have done such an awesome job in bringing this map to life because, oh my God, the daunt. How pretty was that? Let's talk about it.
Oh, it was gorgeous. It was gorgeous. Like, I mean, the whole game is just beautifully animated and rendered, but I mean, like every location, whether it's like the more like jungle-like locations and like the western regions or like the northern regions where it's more like, like foresty and then like the coastal regions and even like the desert regions, like everything is just beautifully animated. And I think like the when they mentioned or like teased that there was going to be like some desert regions, I was kind of like nervous about that because deserts are essentially a lot of sand and it's like
Sam.
they can be beautiful in their own way, but how do you as a player, how do you kind of get excited about exploring a desert? But I think
Well,
this
if you
game,
look at
because it's
Origins,
more
it'll tell you because it was beautiful. But I know what you mean, though. I understand. But yeah, these guys did such a wonderful job. But yeah, the passage to Barren Light is through the Daunt and a town called an Azaram town called Chainscrape. So let's talk about that and how she deals with people in the Daunt who are basically like making it difficult for her. Let's talk about it. And yes, I'm talking
I
about
mean,
Studious Wadis. I am. I really am. But let's talk about it.
yeah, I mean, again, a lot of like the opening portions of the game is just Aloy cleaning up other people's messes. And the Daunt is like a really good example because when she gets into this region, which is it's essentially, I think, kind of like a valley almost. And it's it's she needs to pass through to lead up to or to get into Barren Light where the embassy is going to take place, but she has to clear out the Daunt before she can really get to Barren Light. And there's a number of issues here. Chainscrape is being run by somebody who's not competent enough. There's
Competent and
also
then a bristleback problem, basically.
So like more machines and tougher machines than what the locals in the Daunt may have encountered. And then on top of it all, like you mentioned, Studious Wadis is kind of like this Carja sun priest who's assigned to, I think, lead the embassy or be a part of the embassy as like a representative. And he's just like all kinds of condescending and
And pompous.
stuck up and yeah, that's probably a better word. But yeah, he's not at all really, I think, impressed by Aloy, which is stupid of him. But
True.
he's kind of like, oh, this Nora can't do anything, and like I know what I'm talking about because I'm a high sun priest, and this is just like a lowly savage from the east, like that type of mentality. But anytime Aloy gets to interact with him, the dialogue I always found was
It's
like really simple,
beautiful.
really,
I
really
love it.
funny.
It's really simple. It's like, hey. And the next line she tells him is, shut up. Just, I love it. It's simple, yet effective. I love it. I need more of that in my life. I mean, it's beautiful because he's being high and mighty. And I love how she puts, like, I would, there's an Azaram guard who's been assigned to protect Wadis. And she just goes up to him and like, I was expecting more action and less scripture. Can you tell me more about what's going on here? So it was just like so funny. And I love how to the point she is about this. But in this process, we get to see Aaron. So let's talk about that because I love Aaron, another wholesome character. Let's talk about him.
Yeah, I mean, it was so great to see familiar faces so early on in the game. And yeah, then also characters who are like, you know, clearly very close to Aloy in the sense, yes. I think both Varl and Aaron have, and they actually do just kind of, anytime she needs them, just drop what they're mm-hmm. doing and like yeah. come to her aid if she needs like backup or whatever.
Yes.
And it was so nice seeing them, but also it was kind of interesting because I think at the end of the first game, I think Aaron was kind of expecting that, you know, like he's made this great friend and, you know, they've been yeah. on this crazy adventure together. Maybe Aloy would stick around, but literally the night of her celebration, she just like disappears.
Yeah.
So he hasn't seen
her. He's a little mad about that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So it was nice to see him, but also kind of funny that he was just like a little bit like
miffed.
Upset that like.
A little bit. Yeah.
But they have this really like nice reunion, which is really sweet. So.
It is sweet. I love it because it's like they're so happy to see each other genuinely, and it's a sweet thing. And I'm like, yeah, that's nice. And he does mention that he's mad, but then I think he that just dissipates when he learns that she needs help. So it's like I kind of love him for it. Really, it's just
I know. Again, sweet. He's also like really wholesome and just. Yeah, so sweet, so nice. Really yeah. funny too. Like he's got some of the best random lines in the game, but we'll go into that in a bit. But it's so funny to anytime he like talks about old one stuff and
or listen to death metal.
Yeah.
But anyway, yes. So yeah, she does take care of the problems of Chainscrape and the bristleback problem. So the embassy is supposed to be happening. But let's talk about one character that Avad has mentioned, because you mentioned that they were exchanging prisoners, not exchanging prisoners, but basically releasing a prisoner in exchange for trade passage or stuff like that. And this year, the prisoner that they've decided to release was Fashab, Avad's cousin. He turns out to be slightly important here. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of a unique character because he was captured in Tanakh's territory during the Red Raids, but yeah. he kind of integrated himself into their society.
Exactly.
And rose pretty high up in their ranks. So he's a marshal yeah. and essentially like an enforcer under the Tanakh chief, Hikaru, who's trying to unite the different Tanakh tribes under kind of one unified banner as opposed to right, you know, three separate right, clans. Right. And so Fashab has kind of been instrumental in enforcing Hikaru's law and also getting that to happen. But more than that, I think he's also a very keen diplomat. And he kind of sees this as an opportunity to not only go back and kind of resume his old life, but also he describes as he's in a unique position because he knows the ins and outs of Tanakh society and, you know, their way of life, but also having been Karja, he knows about the Karjas too. So he's like in a really unique position. And I think he's like, the cool thing about him was that he was actually genuinely excited to go back to his old life to see what kind of positive changes he could make there, which I think was so cool and so nice that he was like thinking that far ahead. Like he wasn't like, yes, I'm going back to my old life. It was also like, I can do some real good. And like, now that I know so much about being Tanakh, I can bring that back to the Karja and, you know, maybe like dispel some stereotypes or whatever. And so that was really cool that he was like so excited about that. But
let's talk about what happens here, because I think there's a moment, because there's three Tanakh tribes, right? And the embassy can't start until all three tribes are, there. But that, there's some tension, but eventually that happens. However, the embassy is crashed by a Tanakh rebel called Regala. So let's talk about her, because she becomes important, or I wouldn't say instrumental, but kind of important. Let's talk about that. Exactly. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, she was really interesting because we find out that she was actually very close to Hikaru, and she was probably one of his best marshals, if not his best. And Fashav kind of describes Regala as Hikaru's biggest mistake because Hikaru is, I think, more reasonable in the sense he sees an opportunity for peace despite what the Karja have done in the past. And obviously, I think he recognizes that the Karja of the present are not all the Karja of the past, and that it's to a certain extent a little bit unfair to hold like an entire group of people responsible for the actions of like a very select few, or like a group that was, particularly evil, when probably the vast majority of Karja just didn't really want to participate in the Red Raids or whatever. But either way, I think Hikaru recognizes that like the Red Raids were in the past, this is the present, and they have an opportunity to like, smooth things out and like make peace and get, kind of benefit from like a healthier sort of diplomatic relationship than maybe
Yeah,
what
for
his
sure.
predecessors in the previous Karja had. Regala, on the other hand, is just like, all Karja are evil. If anybody's like making any deals with them, that's basically just consorting with the enemy, and you should all be dead. So she, I think at one point, like prior to the game starting, she had challenged Hikaru,
To a
lost, and instead
duel.
of kind of killing her, right? Yeah, instead of killing her, he just like essentially exiles her. So Fashav describes that as like Hikaru's big mistake because he's kind of like, Regala really should have been killed, but now she's kind of emerged as like this huge thorn in Hikaru's side because she's working to essentially undermine him and everything he wants
Everything
to
he
do and
stands for.
accomplish. Right. So, yeah, it was interesting to like get that backstory on Regala literally within seconds of her appearing. But she is, she is a huge antagonist for like the first portion of the game. She's like the primary antagonist really for a good chunk. And then
And she's
we
pretty
find out that,
ruthless. She's a pretty ruthless warrior too. Like, let's talk about
right. But I
that.
think, yeah, the cool thing, not about her being ruthless, but the cool thing about the story is that you think just based off of her initial introduction that like, okay, this is a big bad. We've been introduced to the big bad already pretty early on. But we find out that she's actually just a pawn in a much larger game. So
You do, and we'll
it
talk
was
about
interesting
that.
to kind of see that and
I
learn about
agree.
that.
I agree.
So yeah, but no, her introduction was both cool because Angela Bassett voices Regala, which
Amazing. Oh
I
my
just
God.
that's yeah.
That woman is
Cool.
amazing. I cannot say that enough. She's great. She's great.
Yeah.
But yes,
But also just like her introduction, it's literally like she pops up at this super important, super monumental sort of event, like both the
Gathering,
Tanakhs and the Karja, and her warriors or her rebels kind of decimate the entire, like
They make short
event in
work of
minutes.
these people, basically. It's like,
Yeah,
you're
so
right.
it's like literally within minutes of like meeting Fashav, he died, which is unfortunate because even that short amount of time, there was so much about him that was so interesting. And I think as like a NPC or as a character that you interact with, he was one I think I would have liked to see more. But unfortunately, in this fight that happens between Regala and the Karja representatives and the Tanakh representatives, a lot of them do die. And Aloy and Varl, of course, survive because Varl has caught up with her by this time. But a lot of the Tanakh, unfortunately, do die. A lot of the Karja die. Wadis dies. And so it's kind of like a bloodbath, which is a little bit sad because these are characters that some of them, like you've just gotten to meet, but some of them, which I think is also kind of cool, like they pop up here at the embassy very, very briefly, and then you don't see them until later in the story. But again, they become very instrumental later in the story. So Katalo is one of Hikaru's marshals who is at the embassy, and you see him very briefly. I think he has maybe like one or two lines, like very minimal dialogue at the embassy, but then he becomes a fairly important character later down the line.
In
So
down
that
the
was
line,
cool that they
yeah.
were like planting seeds, and then you just have to wait for them to grow later on in the story.
Definitely, but before Fashav dies, he gives Aloy a weapon or something like a dagger or a knife, I think, that will basically guarantee her passage into Tanakh territory, even though that might be contentious. I mean, it's like you can go show this as a token, but I cannot guarantee that they will be friendly or that it would be easy. So let's talk about that because again, the place where Silence indicated Hades would be is in Tanakh territory. So let's talk about that because this is where things get interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with Fashav also was interesting just because he points out kind of like bluntly, he says to Aloy, like, this is a huge mission that you're undertaking because, you know, there's a period of time where they're waiting for the embassy to start. And so he's trying to get a feel for like who Aloy is, what she does. And so she explains her story, he explains his, and like they trade information. But at one point, he, you know, in talking to Aloy, he's like, you're on a huge mission, which is like great, it's amazing. But there's only two of you. And this is like a huge undertaking that you both set out to accomplish. And so he's kind of trying to give her advice. And he's like, you know, trust me when I say you're going to need friends and allies before this whole thing is through. And so that I think was super interesting and super cool that he kind of points it out early on, because over the course of the game, that's kind of what Aloy does. She like gets new allies and friends, maybe not intentionally, in the sense I don't think she goes looking specifically for allies, but they find her anyway. But that part was interesting. But yeah, like you mentioned, Silence is like kind of deep in Tanakh territory, or certainly deeper than, you know, just being at the embassy will being at the embassy is. And so Aloy just has to kind of, she has to do whatever she needs to do to find him, because, you know, he's annoying, and unfortunately he also has some information that she may or may
That
not need. She
she
doesn't know at this point.
definitely, no, she definitely needs because Hades could be the key to finding where Gaia might be. So, like,
Yeah, I mean, I think she recognized that, but I think part of her is also like she's still not entirely willing to trust any information he's giving her. So
fair,
she's kind of,
yeah.
I think a better way of putting it maybe was that she is probably on guard, because
On
Silence
guard, but
is
it's the
not
only
wrong
lead
about
she
information.
has. Yeah,
Right. Yeah. But Silence
you're
also
right.
has a habit of using her, you know, for his own goals and stuff like that. So I think she's like, she knows that if she's going into Tanakh's territory, and especially if she's going to deal with Silence again, she just has to be on her guard. So
For
yeah, I think
sure.
she's a little bit more wary than maybe she was in the first game.
No, I agree. And she has every right to be. Good on you, girl. Be safe. But yeah, so at this point, that and this is where we find her venturing further into the West, Varl being injured again in this battle, and Eren being injured by the Bristlebacks. She heads off alone at this point again. Looking for Gaia again. So let's talk about how she finds Hades and what information Hades gives her and what we find at the Hades Proving Lab, because that turns out to be super important. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, so she has successfully managed to track Silence and Hades into Tanakh territory at this point, and she finds the remnant of Hades. Silence has basically just tortured this AI into
Whatever
like
it is,
oblivion
yeah,
almost.
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, if it was possible
An
for
inch of
an
its
AI to
life,
die,
possibly, yeah.
if it was possible for an AI to die, like Silence has brought Hades within an inch of his death.
Yeah.
Aloy does complete the job, and she does finish Hades, but not before Hades kind of tries to, I think, threaten her with higher or like larger threats. But you know, Aloy, again, she's got so many things on her plate. She doesn't really have time to worry about other stuff that might be coming further down the line when like the blight is a huge issue. Restoring Gaia and like re-terraforming the earth is an issue and all of that. So it's like
And now the whole
Hades
Tanakh
needs to
rebel
complete.
thing is an issue. for some
Right,
reason.
yeah, that too. But like
Yeah.
a lot of these things, I think she has to like prioritize. And I think for her, it's like the blight and then figuring out where Gaia is are like the biggest
Yeah.
things.
Yeah.
And so, when she finally meets Silens, or when she finally gets more information from him, she has to go to the Hades Proving Lab, which is, I think, where they
Yeah.
like did tests on Hades prior to Zero Dawn officially launching back in the 21st
Exactly.
century.
Exactly.
And she has to,
So
retrieve a
let's
Gaia
do,
kernel, but it's
let's talk about
it's
this a little bit, because I think let's talk about the few dead ends that she encountered, because we see a few log files and audio files where if you guys remember Travis Tate, he's the guy who designed Hades. He was part of the Zero Dawn team, and they found. And then these people found out that another group had stolen a copy of Gaia, but the copy of Gaia that was stolen turned out to be a virus, basically, which was the dead end that they encountered. I love that scene. It was kind of funny to see. But now this is an actual lead in the Hades Proving Lab. But the twist here is Aloy thinks that she'll find Gaia with all her sub-functions in that kernel, but unfortunately, she only finds Gaia, which is a task, but that's not the only thing that she encounters, because a certain group is also there with a bombshell of a reveal. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I think there's some mentions throughout like the early portions of Forbidden West to this other group. So like you were
True.
mentioning, like you mentioned Travis Tate and Zero
Yeah.
Dawn and all of that, and we find out that while Zero Dawn was in development, there was another initiative
Group.
almost called Far
Yeah.
Zenith, which was
Yeah.
basically kind of
Trying
about,
to copy
I
or
guess,
replicate this.
to an extent, yeah. So like the Far Zenith initiative, they wanted their own copy of Gaia and all her sub functions so that they could, terraform their own location. But it's kind of like, I guess, what you would expect if a bunch of rich people were in charge of Zero Dawn.
Oh my God,
It
yes.
was like just a bunch of
So
like rich
true.
people who were decided to like pool their resources and then go out into space because Earth was not salvageable and
Yeah.
they weren't going to stick around to, die in the Pharaoh plague. So they built this, huge fancy spaceship, and the goal is to get all
Odyssey.
these people off
Yeah.
of Earth and
Yeah.
into space. And Aloy believes, based on data that she encountered or collected at the
That
time, that the
spaceship
Odyssey
exploded.
perished.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
so it seems like the Far Zenith initiative just didn't
Take
really work,
off or
and
warp.
any sort of
Yeah.
initiative. Yeah. Like it seems like Zero Dawn is really the only thing that did work.
Yeah.
But by the time she gets to the Hades Proving Lab, this is kind of turned upside down because
Oh.
we as players may guess just based off of, different data points and all that stuff that is in the world, but Aloy isn't still 100% sure at this point. But we do see the introduction of Far Zenith actually. So now we know
Yeah,
that there's
but
a
before
Zenith
we
group.
do, just 1 second, because the entry to this Hades Proving Lab requires a biological signature of
Yeah,
Elizabeth. That's important
that's
to
the
note.
big,
That's important to note. So continue. Now continue your point, because now we know what the bombshell reveal
It's
is going to
kind of
be.
like
Yeah. Let's
it's all
talk
like
about
leading
it.
up to it, but
Yes. Let's talk
probably I
about
think the
it.
game does it with more suspense than we could do it.
Oh,
But yeah,
for
like you
sure, for
said, you
sure.
need the entry to the Hades Proving Lab is only for authorized personnel essentially, and you
Yeah.
need a specific biological signature to get it. And Aloy, of course, being essentially a clone of Elizabeth Sobeck, has been able to
Yeah.
get access her whole life into most places that others were
Yeah.
usually denied entry. But all of a sudden, she is no longer the only one who can access these places because she retrieves a Gaia kernel. But while she's there, Silence decides that now is a good time to open his mouth, and he says, he's invited some friends over for Aloy to meet, and he's like convinced, he's like, they're not going to hurt you, they're not going to kill you because you're more useful to them alive, and like it's going to be great. And again, this is all just for him really to kind of get what he wants, which he still hasn't told Aloy. But Aloy is like very wary at this point, and she's like super pissed too that this jerk has invited people who are probably going to kill her. And Silence like trying
Exactly.
to convince her like, don't worry, they won't,
They'll be
but they totally
nice.
want to.
Yeah, they
And
totally
Aloy
want
just
to.
like, yeah, she's I think kind of like if she could, I think she would wring Silence's neck.
Oh,
But she doesn't have
yeah.
that luxury because one, Silence isn't there physically. He's just interacting via focus network. And two, this lock that is, on the Hades Proving Lab that nobody but her should be able to open is now opened.
Is
And so she and we as
and
players get to see the remnants of the Far Zenith colony for the first time, and they have with them a second clone of Elizabeth that nobody knew about and Aloy didn't
Beta,
know about.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
It's
it's a
quite a
huge reveal
shocker.
because
Yeah, it
yeah.
is for sure. Because it's just because one of two things here, because like Aloy operated on the fact that she was the only one who could have, especially in the first game, she was operating under the assumption that she was the only one who had access to these locked doors so that she could make this right. That was her whole deal in the first game. And now, even now, that was her assumption until it's shattered completely by this reveal. And she's like, oh my God, what the heck is this? How did this happen? Kind of thing. And not only that, she ends up fighting one of the people from Far Zenith who turn out to be invulnerable because of some shields that they've invented. And it makes it
Right.
impossible for her to even land a hit on them. So let's talk about all of that.
Yeah, I mean the kind of like mini boss fight that you do at that portion of the game is really frustrating because the encounter goes about as well as you would expect. Silence has devised this plan and in kind of typical Silence fashion has miscalculated because he has this issue that he will never admit to, but is kind of obvious, I think, to us as players that he tends to underestimate
Yeah.
a lot of his opponents. And
Yes.
he underestimated Aloy, and now he's underestimated these people that he hasn't actually like sat down with them and had a conversation. He's reached out to them but kept himself anonymous enough to kind of protect himself. But he's like fully exposed Aloy by, bringing her here, giving her this like breadcrumb trail to follow. And now that Aloy and the Far Zenith people are in the same location, and they're face to face and they can see each other, the meeting goes about as well as we would expect. But Silence
Yeah,
apparently
because they have
feels
no need for her. They're basically like, get rid
right.
of
They
her.
have their own clone, right? And
Yeah.
Silence didn't even he didn't know about that, so he couldn't have taken it into account. But it's like, this is why you don't just do things, you don't gamble with people.
Yeah.
So he had kind of promised Aloy, like, don't worry, they're not going to kill you. But now Aloy is expendable because they have their own clone who can do everything Aloy can do in terms of, activating certain things or getting into certain regions and
Exactly.
all of that.
Exactly.
And so they have no need for her. So you have to fight one of them. And then, like you said, he's got an impenetrable shield, which essentially just kind of makes him impossible to fight. So it's more of like a this weird, like, dance type thing where it's like he's trying
You
to
can
kill
only
you
stop
but
him
avoid
for a
him.
little bit while you make your escape. So let's talk
Yeah.
about that. Because the poor girl
So
is hurt by the end of
she
this.
is, unfortunately, yeah. So I mean she does get away, which I don't think there's really any doubt that Aloy would get away when she could. But when she does get away, she unfortunately is injured because the whole kind of escape and the whole sort of battle at the Hades Proving Lab is kind of one that you cannot fight, like you physically cannot fight because everybody that she's fighting is so overpowered. And not only that, but the Far Zenith bad guys, if you will, have their own machines that are kind of more advanced than any machine that
That
is
Aloy's
currently
ever
on Earth right
encountered.
now.
Yeah,
And yeah,
exactly.
exactly. So it's just kind of like a pointless battle, at least on Aloy's part. Like she's not going to win against them. And so the best thing she can do is just escape and live to, fight another day type thing. So she does manage to escape, but unfortunately, with everything, she is wounded and she does kind of she's out of it for a bit because she's pretty, badly injured. But at this point, thankfully, everybody's favorite Varl has recovered And he actually finds her,
He finds her.
and he takes her back to like an Utaru settlement called, I think it's Stone's Echo where you go. He kind of, tells her like, don't worry, it's all good. We can rest here. You can recover. And we also meet another important character.
Zo.
Yes.
Cool.
It was so
Let's
much
talk
fun
about
as a kid
Zo
because
because she's awesome.
she is, and in a lot of ways, she's very similar to Varl. Because I think part of what makes this game so interesting is that part of it is, Aloy doing these different tasks and stuff because she has to. But then I think one of the cool aspects that I really enjoyed too was actually just like making alliances and like
For
making friends
sure.
with people and just like seeing them understand the world Aloy does. Because kind of like we mentioned earlier, she has like all these spare focuses, and she's kind of giving focuses to all her allies now, so they can see everything she sees. And so it's not just like she's the only one who has access to this information. Now everybody that she chooses can see what she wants them to see. And so I just thought that was so cool. Also, there was so much going on in the game. I think we forgot to mention, but Cylons and Aloy used to communicate via focus network, but then
I think
Aloy
she
cuts them off.
crushes. Yeah, she does. And I love
She
it. He
crushes
deserves
him. I
that.
know that scene was so satisfying. Yeah, because he totally deserves it. But it was just, I mean, I just wish he had done it sooner. It was like you did not need to put up with him that long. But yeah, at the Hayu Proving Lab before, she meets the Far Zenith group, Aloy was just like so done with the silent shit that she's like, she just can't deal with him anymore. She's like, I don't care. And even though, her focus has seen her through so much, she has so many now, so she can afford to lose a couple. So she breaks her focus, which again was so satisfying. Also just like a little bit bittersweet because it's like that focus saw her through so much in the first game. So it's like super sad that she broke it, but
No,
still
that's true.
satisfying because
It is
and that
satisfying.
silence is cut off.
Yes, but let's talk about why the Utaru are important and why Zo is important in at this stage in the game. Because when she got the Gaia kernel from the proving lab, she knew that it was only the Gaia kernel and she needed to get the sub-function kernels, but the only one she has a lead on is Minerva. And that sub-function is currently only available with in a place which is part of the Utaru stronghold in Plainsong. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, so I think at the Hades Proving Lab, Aloy is when she finds out that Gaia doesn't have any of her sub functions, I think Silence like, oh well, this is a stupid plan because we're not going to get anywhere without any sub functions. But Aloy is resourceful and super smart, and she has access to more data than Silence probably knows what to do with, and she's clever enough to kind of see certain threads, and so she's like, this might seem hopeless to you, but like we know where certain sub functions are. We can get the sub functions that we know of and
And
start
go from
building
there.
Gaia back up. Right. Yeah. So I think even by that point, Silence has to admit that he's impressed with that plan. But I think the problem at present is that one of the sub functions, Minerva, is in an Utaru sacred cave, or what they consider a cave, but it's really like a cauldron or like some sort of like
Pretty
repair bay
much.
or some sort of old world facility that unfortunately has lost its meaning. But in order to go in and retrieve Minerva, who's kind of, I think if I remember correctly, I believe Minerva was like cloaking the other sub functions so they
She
couldn't
was.
locate or pinpoint their precise locations without kind of merging Minerva with Gaia. So Aloy has to retrieve Minerva first, and they have to get permission from the Chorus, which is like the Utaru governing body or leadership or whatever. And Zo is kind of instrumental in getting Aloy that permission to go in and get Minerva. And once they do have Minerva, they're able to merge her with Gaia and kind of start slowly rebuilding all her sub functions and kind of restoring her to what she was. But Minerva, I think like after that mission, we got a couple of interesting revelations because there's a number of things that Aloy is trying to do, like, restore Gaia, restore the sub functions, restart this whole terraforming thing. But in order to do that, they need to bring Hephaestus under control. And unfortunately,
Yeah, let's
Gaia,
talk
she's
about
not,
that. That's super important.
she's not powerful enough, unfortunately, the way she is now to
Merge with
reboot. I mean,
Hephaestus,
right.
basically,
Yeah. So
because
I think,
Hephaestus is a problem because he spread all over the network. So it's like it's really difficult to basically, how do I put this? It's really difficult to basically take control of Hephaestus or merge Hephaestus with Gaia the way she is now, because she doesn't have enough power to, absorb him or whatever. So basically, that's where we're at this point. So that's an important thing. That's going to be a task for her to complete. So let's talk about that, because each of these three sub-functions that she has to get turns out to be a mini arc in and of itself. So let's talk about that because I find this really interesting.
It is, yeah, and it was super cool because each like mini arc was so different and so unique on its own. And I just thought that was like super cool to see that like they're all varied and unique, and each one they still tie into the main story very well, but they feel very like distinct too, which is sometimes I think hard to pull off. But in my opinion, I thought that it was really well done. But yeah, she has the, now that once Minerva's merged with Gaia, she knows the location of Poseidon, Demeter, and Aether,
That's
and
right.
she has to go on different quests to bring them back. And so
Each
the
of them
cool
is
thing
its
too with
own
this
arc, which I
portion,
really love.
right? Yeah, and like gameplay wise, the cool thing, the sorry, can't talk. The
It's
cool
all right.
thing with this portion is that like the game lets you choose which one you want to start with, so you're not locked into doing a specific one. So you can really do them in any order. And
That is
there's
pretty
cool perks
cool.
with everyone. So yeah, the Poseidon arc. And I don't know if we mentioned spoilers, but spoilers abound. So if you're listening this far and not aware, I'm sorry.
We're
I
so
think we were in
sorry,
our
guys,
excitement,
but
we forgot to
we
mention
forgot to mention
spoilers.
that.
But the Poseidon arc gives you the rebreather. The Demeter arc, you get the software upgrade to do, or to essentially hack the metal flowers, which like
Because
take
that
down
is
the Edmund Time
Demeter.
Reeds. Yeah.
You're right.
So there's like
You're right.
little cool perks kind of with every single one. But yeah, you can really do them in any order, and they're all I think like a riot. They're so much fun. There's great characters in every single one. I think my favorite though, like just in terms of like NPCs, would probably have to be Poseidon, because you meet like these three dudes who are just down in the remains of Las Vegas, and
Asaram people way in
yeah, they're
Las
just looking for a good
Vegas.
time.
Aaron
And
would be proud.
oh my God, I know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And let's talk about the machine that you fight for it to get to Poseidon, because the Poseidon kernel is underwater, guys. Let's just be clear. It's underwater, which is why you need to need the rebreather in the first place. But the machine that you end up fighting here is called a Tide Ripper, but Cass and I ended up calling her Nessie, basically. It's just Nessie. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really cute machine when you see it, because it's not as like threatening as like a Thunderjar, like a Glintock or something, but it is massive. And
It
I
is
would love to
massive.
see a comparison, like a size comparison between all the different machines from Zero Dawn and Forbidden West. I just think that would be really cool, because like sometimes it's really hard to get a scope of how big some of these machines are, because it's like I have a tendency to like measure everything against a Thunderjaw, so it's like
Because
it's not
I think the
that
Thunderjaw
big.
was the biggest machine that we saw in the first game, I feel like.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. But like in this game, there's so many like huge machines, but like I would really just love like a size comparison to see like which one is
That would
big,
be
because
cool.
there's Thunderjaws from the original game, there's these ones, Tide Rippers, there's Tremor Tusks, which I
Tremor
think featured a lot in
tusks.
like the promo material.
Shell
And
snappers.
shell snappers, slaughter spines,
Oh my God, yes, the slaughter spines are
and
huge.
dreadwings too. Dreadwings are like massive, and I would love to
Yeah.
see like a comparison between like a dreadwing and like a thunderjaw, because it feels like it's like a smaller machine, but still like a thunderjaw, just on wings. So
Yeah,
yeah,
I
the
think you could
dreadwings
carry a
they were fun to
Thunderjaw in
fight.
its talons and just fly off, and you'd be like, what the
Well, I don't know about that, but they're definitely massive and like bigger than I was prepared for, because anytime a machine
Yeah.
flies, because I'm a terrible shot, I'm just like, all right, this is gonna go horribly. I'm probably not gonna land a single hit. But the dreadwings, I feel like they're so big that you kind of do end up landing hits. But they're also, I think I've never had this happen in my file, and maybe because I just lucked out, and or because maybe it was a glitch, I don't know. But I think supposedly the dreadwings are supposed to turn invisible, so it's like a flying
What?
invisible machine.
You mean like the
And
stalkers?
yeah, it's like a flying stalker essentially, but it's like, it's much bigger, and
Huh. Yeah, I
they do
haven't
more
seen that
damage.
either, but maybe when this comes to PC, Sony. Anyway, sorry. Sorry. I just, I, you know what? I'm trying to not be salty about this right now, but okay. But you know what I mean. But oh my God, that's pretty crazy. Yeah. But
Yeah,
of
they're like
course,
I think it was like in the machine log or like the machine notebook, but I've never had a Dreadwing turn invisible on me. I've always been able to see them, but they do a lot of damage, more than a stalker, I think. And so it
The
was
terror of
fun, but also
having a
frustrating to
shell
fight.
snapper belly flop on you is the worst thing ever. Don't ever try it.
I mean, I think it's less intimidating after the first time, because like,
Yeah,
it's
but
a
the first
dude.
time you see it do a belly flop on you, you're like, what the heck is this kind of thing, you know? Like, I
Yeah,
mean.
it's equal parts terrifying but also exciting, because I think one of like the really exciting things about playing a game for the first time is, especially with a game like this when there's like new
Yeah.
machines and stuff,
Oh my God,
it's
yes.
kind of almost like, this might be a terrible analogy, but to me it's almost like playing a Pokemon game, where it's like every new iteration of Pokemon there's new
That's
types of
true.
Pokemon that you go and hunt and find, and
Especially
so it's
if you
always
want to
cool
figure
to see
out a
new ones.
strategy of how you can beat it, find its weak points, all those things. It's pretty cool.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah, so
For sure.
I just thought it was like super cool that we got new machines, and it was so much fun to go and find them, even though you had no idea what they did. And so part of the fun for me was like finding a super machine and then like totally freaking out when it was like
Yeah.
a slaughter spine or like a tremor tusk you have to fight as part of the main story, actually. And because it was in the promo material, like I think that kind of prepares you for, big machines. But
Yep.
like sun wings, I was not prepared for, and I just found one
Oh.
just when I was like, free roaming, and it just like I
I think
happened upon it, or it saw me.
a couple of machines that we saw were Claw Striders, Tremor Tusks, and the Slitherfang. These are the three machines that we actually saw in the promo material. But let's talk about the other sub functions because important stuff happens. Because like if you look at Aether, you get to finally meet Hikaru and actually know Catalo a bit more and participate in an event called the Cold Route, which is basically Hikaru's way of recruiting more marshals to unite the Tanakh. So let's talk about that because Aloy's sass is on another level in that quest line. I just
Yeah,
bravo,
the Aether
girl,
arc was
bravo.
it was a lot of fun. A little bit more work, I think, than probably she needed to put in. Because I mean,
Because
from a
Hikaru's
gameplay point of view, I
basically like,
understand,
no,
but
yes, but Hikaru's like, you know what? I don't care about the end of the world. I know you need this, but I need my tribe to be united first. So, you know, do that for me and then we'll talk about this. Not that he knows that those are the stakes, but it's kind of like that. And it's like,
right.
okay, I guess. But then he sends a bit the but she and Catalo form an unlikely alliance to basically recruit people from all the tribes to participate in this event. One clan unfortunately is being difficult. So let's talk about that because I love Aloy's sass in this one. It's just She's a
Yeah,
woman after my
I
own
don't
heart.
think
She's a woman after my heart.
she is, she really is. But I don't think so Aelin Catalo, I don't think they've recruited anybody. The most
No.
of the like so each tribe has to send candidates, and I think the
Yeah.
Desert Clan and the Lowland Clan had sent their candidates to the Cool Root,
Yeah.
which is basically like the Tanakh equivalent of the Proving,
Yeah.
but nicer. The Sky Clan had not sent anybody, and because Catalo was initially from the Sky Clan, and also I guess it's like Hikaru's right-hand man, Hikaru sends him with Aloy, and at first Hikaru, sorry, Catalo is
Yeah.
very like kind of standoffish. He just doesn't
Yeah.
like the idea of being back home, especially with
Yeah.
like this random outlander or
Yeah.
savager from the east or whatever they're calling her. And he's just very kind of like upset about the whole thing. But the really cool thing is like over time you kind of see him warm up to Aloy because like it's
Yeah.
Aloy, everybody loves her. And
Yeah,
he
they
does.
form a very strong alliance in the end, which I absolutely love. But yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just like the whole Sky Clan arc was, it was a lot of fun. Also, again, some of like the prettiest scenery in the game, just like being up north and like,
Beautiful.
yeah, it's like, I don't know, it kind of in a weird way, like some of the like regions up there kind of reminded me of Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh, okay.
Just like
Okay.
the
I haven't
scenery
played
and
that game,
stuff
but
and
all right.
yeah, I don't know. It's just it's they're both gorgeously animated, is what I'm trying to get at.
No, I agree.
But
Well,
it's
but Aloy is such a she's a menace in the best possible way, right? She's
I
like,
just it's I
let's
just
talk
think
about
it's so
Chakotay
clever
for a
that
minute because yeah,
yeah,
it's
it's I think that's the thing that I love about Aloy though, that she's like clever, resourceful, witty, snarky, like all of these amazing things. And I think this is a really fun sequence because she got to do something kind of, I guess, I don't want to say out of character for her,
It's
but it's like I think
risky.
something that it's risky and something that she might not have considered doing before.
Yeah.
But the big thing is like Tecote, who's like this leader of the Sky Clan, just doesn't want to send people
Yeah.
to the Cool Root because
He's
where they
being super
are, they're
stubborn about it too. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
and the Sky Clan is essentially protected because they're behind this huge wall called the Bulwark, and like it's never fallen. And so they're like, we don't need to worry about the other clans, they can do what they want. We're safe from Regala here, when the reality is like no
Yeah.
one is safe because she's crazy.
Yeah, that woman's crazy. That woman's crazy, y'all.
They have to kind of force him to join. And it's really funny because he's like, as long as the bulwark stands, I'm not sending any of my men. And so Aloy is not just like, well, now what do we do? She's like, all right, fine. If that's how we're going to phrase it, I'll bring down the bulwark, which she does. She
And
like
then
brings down this huge wall.
Catalo's like, what the hell? But, well, she
I think
does
he's
bring it
impressed by
down.
that.
He is impressed by it. At first, he's like, what the hell? But she does bring it down. You're like, okay.
Yeah, I just love that it's
Okay.
almost like without missing a beat. Like, I mean, it's
Yeah.
not like, you know, Aloy doesn't, as soon as Tecote is like, I'm not sending people as long as the bulwark stands,
Yeah.
Aloy's not just like, oh my God, woe is us, we can't do this. I mean, that's not how she
Yeah.
is as a character in general. But I
Yeah.
think it's so cool that it's like almost without missing a beat, she finds
Yeah.
like this weakness in the bulwark and she's like, hey, we can exploit this. And he phrased it a very specific way, like, as long as the bulwark stands. So all we have to do is make sure it doesn't stand. So it's like a different way to approach the problem, which I think is so cool. But also, like, that
Love
scene was
her
just really
for it.
funny.
I love her for it.
It's
She's
like, I don't
amazing.
know how many people would think of that and just be like, yeah,
Yeah.
we're gonna take down this giant wall.
Yeah. So yeah, after this crazy incident at the Bulwark, basically they have to make sure that the Cold Road happens. Chakotay is finally forced to send candidates to the Cold Road so that Hikaru can select his marshals from all three clans of the Tanakh. And that's how it is. So let's talk about that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think one, it was nice to not participate in it because Aloy's
Right?
already been through the proving, and
Yeah.
that was an ordeal and a half. And
Oh God,
as fun
yes.
as it was, like leading up to the proving and like, you know, doing all the, you know, training and whatnot for it, I don't think she misses having to
That training
essentially
montage
just
is still
redo
one of
it.
my favorite scenes ever.
I know it's gorgeous. I love it.
Yeah.
But I think as a player, and I'm sure probably as a character, I think it just I think I would like to think that Aloy felt happy to not participate in the
I
Cool
think
Root, but
so.
as a player, I was happy that we didn't have to, because
No, I kind of
it's
agree.
fun, but The thought of going in and just fighting machines for the heck of it is just like, no, because Aloy just has so much on her plate. She, like, this is
And
the
she
last thing
fights
she needs,
machines on
but
the regular just because of what she has to
exactly.
do. So it's
Yeah.
like,
Although I was fully expecting Hikaru to be like, hey, like, join the others in the ring, like, prove your worth. But thankfully, he, I guess, used her skill set slightly better. I don't know. But either way, it was nice not to have to participate in the cool route, but you do have to defend it because at this point it's like known that Regala is going to attack. It's just a matter of like when and where.
When and where? Yeah,
So
absolutely, absolutely.
I will
And
give
it
her
does
credit as
happen.
it
It
does,
does,
yeah.
yeah.
And like I said, I'll give her credit. She can make an entrance. She won't
Regala?
lose, she
Yeah,
comes in
for
and
sure.
sell. Because like when she pops up at the embassy, she's like, riding a Quast Rider, and like that's the first time in the game you see the
You
Quast
see
Rider,
her?
unless you've explored further,
True.
or actually I don't know if you can
I don't
actually
think it
but
lets you. I think in this
maybe
game, the
not.
system, it works in a way. I think, okay, I'm sorry. I've only seen walkthroughs, but maybe you can explore. Maybe you can see the area, but there are some areas that are closed off to you until you actually are within a
Yeah,
mission.
so you can explore like the Daunt and stuff, and you can get like to the Daunt, but basically until you leave Meridian, like so leading up to Meridian, that's like its own little mini map where you can only kind of explore that region. Then once you leave and you go to Meridian, there's like Meridian's, I think, like its own little tiny like pocket. And then once you leave Meridian and like after the title screen pops up, I think then you get like the proper map. But even then, until you leave the Daunt, you can't access the rest of the map because you have like the embassy has to take place and you have to have like done that quest and like physically opened or like have the Karja troops physically open the gates for you at Baron Light. So I think at the very beginning, the embassy is probably the first time you would see a Quast Rider because you
Yeah,
wouldn't
because
be able
I
to
think
explore
up
the
until
map.
then, you're stuck in the Daunt and Chain Scrape. Up until then, up until that point.
Right. Yep.
So with this
But I mean,
done, go ahead,
it's
go ahead.
just
I'm sorry.
no, I was just gonna say like, it was really fun to see Regala like pop up because part of the like I guess surprise is you knew she was coming, but there's like she sends a whole bunch of rebels and machines, and you don't really know where she's coming from. So Aloy's like around the she's like somewhere around the arena, I think
I
like
think she's
defending like the
circling
entrance or
the, yeah,
something.
exactly. She's
She's
circling
not
the area,
circling.
basically.
She's just stationary for that portion because there's like a mounted catapult type thing. There's some sort of weapon that they're like, "Hey, you can go man that," and she's like, "All right." And it's great because one, you don't have to waste your own ammo, and two, like it's hard to take a shot at like one machine in like a moving group of like 10 machines.
True,
So that
very
part was
true.
fun, but then Regala pops up, of course, not where Aloy is stationed, but inside the arena and in style too. Like she pops up. I was looking at the animation and the way she pops up, it looks like she's riding a rock breaker to get in, which would kind of make sense because she pops up underneath the arena. But
But
what
doesn't
pops out
she
of the
need
arena?
air? Like, don't rock breakers like go completely underground unless she used the rock breaker to create a tunneling system that gave her enough oxygen? Like, I
I
don't
mean,
know.
possibly. I don't. I like beyond what we see. I don't know. Like if there's just
Because
like some
rock
other
breakers go
tunnels in there.
completely underground, don't they? Like they literally burrow into the ground and then pop back up, like
They
just.
do, but also they're quick and they're big enough that like I'm wondering if it was like a like. It didn't matter because she was just like in and out. But either way, like the weird thing I was trying to figure out was like specifically how she got into the arena because the animation of like the machine that shows it looks, at least to me, it looked like a rock breaker. But then what pops out is a slurping. So, but I also thought that was really funny because it's like
That's
at
what,
that point, Aloy has already fought a slurping. So, it's like maybe Regala was going for the element of like surprise, but it's like no, it's surprise to you because Aloy's already fought that and she's not fazed by it. And it's also like this really funny scene of like Aloy throwing a rock at this other thing to get its attention.
Oh my God.
And then like Aloy in typical Aloy fashion, like abandoning her post outside the cool route, and then like she becomes the only person from the guard station outside the arena to like drop in and fight this other thing. But the nice thing too is that it's not just Aloy in there. Like part of the cool route is like these Tanakh
Warriors.
warriors have to fight machines. And so like the super brave ones were like, all right, we're gonna
Okay, we'll
stand
fight this
by over
too,
there.
which is cool. Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely,
Yeah. So she wasn't
absolutely.
entirely like 100% alone, but she still did do the bulk of the work. And she goes after Regala herself, obviously, because part of it is also, I guess, like maybe to Aloy it's a little bit personal, but I also just like to think that she's just like so done with Regala that she's
She's
like, you
like,
know
I'm
what, I'm gonna
tired of this.
like,
Let's finish this.
yeah.
Yeah, I
They
agree.
almost do too, which was like the really interesting thing. Like Aloy manages to save Hikaru because, you know, Regala has caused a distraction and she slips away while her rebels are busy just like fighting everybody, and her machines are busy fighting the other Tanakh. And by the time Aloy catches up to her, she's like one-on-one dueling with Hikaru, and he's not doing so great. But Aloy saves him, and I was like, the way it looked, it almost felt like she was going to go toe to like she was going to take on Regala one-on-one. And the first time I saw that scene, I was like, is she going to do it? Is she going to do it? But she doesn't at that point, which honestly is just as well, because again, Aloy just doesn't have time for this, but people are kind of making her jump through hoops to get what she needs. So
I know, and in this
unfortunately, she doesn't
case,
really have
it's
a choice.
Aether. In this case, it's
Yeah.
Aether. So after all this is done, I think where does Regala go after this at this point? Because I think
She just leaves.
she leaves to,
She like slinks
regroup or
away.
something,
Yeah.
right?
And the way she says it,
Exactly.
she's like, I'll be back with everything I have. But my
Yeah.
question was, didn't you come with everything you have?
Right? That's what I
Because
was
like
thinking.
the clone is like a huge
The
gathering of
biggest
Tanakh. Yeah.
exactly.
Well, I don't know about if it's the biggest, but it's like the way like it could very well be, because it's talked up and like hyped up as like this huge gathering, and you know, like there's gonna be
And all the
warriors and
bravest warriors
fighters
are
and
there at that point,
yeah. So it's
right?
like
It's like,
that would have been the time to come with maybe your strongest and like a good chunk of your army, if not all of your army. And I would also just think from like a tactical point of view, wouldn't it be more efficient? Like, why would you fight two battles when you could just pool all your resources? I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Clearly I know nothing about tactics or machine battles, but it's just like if you had
Well,
an opportunity to wipe out the Tanakh all at once, wouldn't you take it as opposed to like waiting? Unless she was thinking that, like, because she was sneaking in, that bringing her whole army would be too much work and not feasible. So maybe she came with
maybe.
like a smaller group because of that. But it's also like you have the ability to override machines now, like Aloy does. And like you've got all these rebels. Like, why would you wait? Like, all of the attention would be on the cool route anyway. You might as well just like storm the place. But again, I know nothing about tactics and like the workings of Regala's mind, but.
Fair. We just ask the devs that.
I would
Anyway.
love to pick their brains
Yeah, for sure,
on so many
because
things.
yeah. But Hikaru stays true to his word. He's like, you've done what you could, you've done what you should have. I'm glad. Thank you. And he basically gives her access to Aether, which she does get. And Katalo, being the nice guy that he is, he's like, now I'll help you with in your mission in whatever way I can. So he joins the group at the base as well. So that's a pretty cool thing. But let's talk about when do we find out about the Omega clearance thing?
So I think that's in, I think that might come after. So you do
I
one of the
think, isn't
sub
it
functions.
Cradle of Echoes? I think that's
No,
when you
I
find
think
out.
it's after, because Cradle of Echoes is a different quest, but it's also equally
No.
important.
No.
But
Because I think, is that when we find out about the Omega clearance after what happens in Cradle of Echoes?
yeah, I think it's after Cradle of Echoes. I could be wrong. Some of the minor details kind of blend together, but yeah,
I
that's
know. Because I think Demeter is kind of tied to that Omega clearance thing in a little way because of the
I think so.
a
I mean, that's the
little
impression I
bit,
got,
not
but
a
I
lot,
again,
but
Yeah, I mean, the way I did it, I felt like so I because you have the ability to choose how you want to do the sub function. So
Of
you
course.
pick one, and then after you finish that, you're automatically locked into Cradle of Echoes. And then
Yeah.
once the Cradle of Echoes is done, you finish the other two. So
Yeah.
when I did it, I did Poseidon first, then Aether, then Demeter. And so
Right.
right after Demeter, you get like the whole like you find out why you need the Omega Clarence, and you get that whole set of quests. And to
All
me,
right.
like that seemed to flow
So,
pretty logically, and like it kind of felt like fluid, like it that felt like its own like little mini arc. And
Well, in that
I
case,
only realized later it's like
let's do Demeter and the Omega Clearance stuff together, because n then and let's talk about Cradle of Echoes for now, because that turns out to be super important, right? So let's talk
Yes.
about that, because I think Gaia warns you that she's getting a signal from Aletheia, but the problem with that is that Aletheia has been silent for centuries. Why would she be sending a signal now suddenly? And that's kind of worrying, right? So let's talk about that and what we find out when we go into this quest, because it's a
Yeah, I
lot.
mean,
Let's talk about it.
there's a number of things, but yeah, the like message, like a secret message being sent, is in itself kind of like suspicious because, like you said, they don't really know specifically who sent it, and
Exactly.
they have like a rough idea of where it originated from, but again, that's also kind of like odd because Aletheia, I think she's been offline, or like she's just dormant and she's not really, or like that particular AI or sub
Transmitting.
function is not
Yeah.
really, yeah, it's not active. So it's weird that it would suddenly be like transmitting a message, but that too, it's like a secret coded message and it's not accessible, or it's apparently not detectable by like Far Zenith or like anybody else or Rebels
Yeah,
or
that's
whoever.
even more
So it's like,
suspicious,
yeah, it's
actually.
coming like directly, I think, to the base. And I don't,
Yeah.
if I remember correctly, I think that like nobody else would really have the ability to like decipher it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like unknowns with this. Like, again, like who sent it, why, all that sort of thing. But it's a
Could
risk
this
that I
be a
think,
trap? Yeah, all those things.
yeah. So I think Aloy, again, is like she's not as quick to kind of jump into it. But at the same time, it's like, they need to find out like the source of it, because if this could lead to another sub function, if it could lead to like a dormant one that could somehow be reactivated or whatever, like they need to know,
Yeah.
because Gaia needs as much power as she can in order to absorb Hephaestus.
Yep,
So
yep,
Aloy
yep.
kind of goes out on a limb and she's like, let's just
I think
go
she and Varl
and see what.
go, right?
She,
Yeah.
Varl, and Erend, yeah, all three of them
Yeah.
go.
Yeah.
And it like the lead up to like getting to the location is really funny, because Erend is like, in true Erend fashion, is like grumbling and complaining, but he
It
still
had
has
to be in the
support about it,
steep
you know, like
rill. It had to be in a steep
yeah.
hill, right? Oh God. Oh, Aaron. Anyway, but let's talk
But yeah,
about
I
what
mean
we
this.
find there, because it's like that is another bombshell of a reveal. So let's talk about that too.
Yeah, I think like that's honestly, it's not like a very flashy reveal in the sense it's not
No.
like there's, you know, like a huge action sequence and like, you know, all of this and like explosions or whatever. It's just kind of like things happen, but we
Yeah.
find, or rather Aloy finds the second clone of Elizabeth, kind of, I guess in like
Yeah.
some sort of suspended animation, or
Yeah.
maybe she's attempted to freeze herself or whatever the case is, but she is sealed in this like weird old ones facility. And it's kind of obvious the Zeniths are they're trying to get her back, because I think when Aloy first gets to that location, there's already some sort of like scuffle happening with against, you know, a Zenith. And I don't know if these people have like any affiliation, but it's just like two people who exist in Aloy's Earth.
Yeah.
I can't remember. They might have been Oseram. I don't remember. Or even just like Rebels or something, but I don't, either way, I don't really think their affiliation matters. The only
It
thing
doesn't.
of note is that like these guys somehow
Pierce the
managed to either
armor.
make or,
Yeah.
yeah. And like they have this weapon that they probably didn't make, but I mean, we as players know they didn't make, but I think Aloy is very quick to like put the pieces together that like that is not technology that these guys would have access to.
Yeah.
And like they wouldn't make it, but it's the only weapon known so far that has pierced the Zenith, the shields.
Yeah.
So obviously she wants a piece of that to like, you know, recreate that, because She's looking for a rematch, but unfortunately that like she's only able to salvage a part of that machine, not the whole thing. But I think she has a pretty good guess as to who
Oh
created
yeah,
it.
I think we all do, right?
Yeah.
I will talk about that in a bit as well. But let's talk, and we find Beta in that facility, and the only thing that they can think of is getting her out of there, and basically trying to understand what's going on, basically. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, that was honestly a very satisfying arc because when you first see Beta, it's evident that she's not really doing what she's doing out of like a desire to, it's like she's not, it's not something that she personally wants to do. That way. She's doing something because there are people who are obviously controlling her or like, you know, demanding things from her. And so she has to comply because that's, you know, kind of her purpose. But it's clear that she's maybe not necessarily entirely comfortable with doing what she's doing. She's only doing it because, again, the Zenith leadership or whatever is kind of like watching her and scrutinizing her and like one wrong move and she's out type thing. But getting her out of this facility and back to the base was just so satisfying because it's like without. I mean, obviously the Zeniths are advanced enough, I think, and they know enough that they could probably get to places with even without Beta, but it's like this will just make it a little bit harder for them. So it
Oh, for
might buy
sure.
us some time. And then beyond that, it's just really cool that, you know, there's now somebody who's similar enough to Aloy that Aloy could maybe relate to. But I think like all sibling relationships go, there's always an element of like frustration and like, oh my God, I can't believe like so and so. And like there's a little bit of like a clash. And so even though it was
It's
nice
always
time to
gonna be
get Beta
like,
back, it's not.
why are they such an idiot? Why? Why? Just why?
Yeah.
You know, it's that. It
Yeah.
happens with all siblings. It's a thing. Okay.
Oh, it totally is.
But yeah, it is a very satisfying thing. And then to find out who the people from Far Zenith are. And the most surprising thing that they find out is that they are the same people from, isn't this what that when they find out that they are the same people that left on the Odyssey 1,000 years ago?
I think so. There's a lot of like, so in between quests, there's a lot of moments where if you talk to the different NPCs around the base, you get more information. And I can't remember if that information came directly from Cradle of Echoes or if it was like one of those moments where you talk to
I
Beta
think when you talk
and
to
then you're
Beta
able to
after you get
see.
her back, like,
Yeah,
you know,
maybe.
after
But either
you
way,
get
yeah. I
her,
mean, the point is still that these guys are not. They're Far Zenith, like the original Far Zenith, like the same people that left Earth in the 21st century and they've found a way to prolong their life. And also, that
We
they
find
like,
names. We find out names. There's
we,
Eric,
yeah, names. Well,
Gerard,
Eric, I think, yeah.
and then
Yeah.
Tilda,
And
and
Verbena.
Verbena. And Tilda, apparently Tilda was trying to be kind to Beta, but suddenly stopped or something like that. Let's talk about that too a little bit, because I think that'll turn out to be important in a little bit.
Yeah, so Beta mentions the only, I guess, kind, and I say kind in quotation marks,
I know.
Zenith was Tilda. And even then, her like behavior is just weird because Beta explains how like Tilda would reach out to her and made like a private data channel and like kind of fashioned it after her house, the way it used to be pre Pharaoh Plague, and she
Oh,
and Beta
God.
would just like meet there and talk about things, and it was like very chill, and like I think it was an escape for Beta, and she kind of came to rely on it because unfortunately the rest of her life was kind of like a shit show. Like, it was just like people using her and like training her and just taking advantage of her because of her genetics, and you know it's not something that she like volunteered or signed up for willingly. It's like they just
I know. They
they
just
made
did
their own
it.
Aloy. Right. But I think Beta really appreciated having Tilda's data channel as an escape, but then she also explains that like randomly out of nowhere, at some point, Tilda just like cut her off and like just did not speak to her. And so obviously that kind of like, you know, I think affected her because I think Beta and Aloy are kind of like opposites,
In a way,
in the
yes,
sense
I
like
agree.
Beta is very, I think, practical, but sometimes because of that, she comes across, I think, as a little like pessimistic or maybe
Yeah.
negative. And
Yeah.
not to say that Aloy isn't practical, but I think Aloy is just like, we're not going to worry about, like, there's no, for her, there, I think, because she has so much to do and she's always going at like 1,000 miles per hour, I don't think she has like a chance to like dwell on like, well, this could go wrong or that could go wrong for her. It's like, well, anything could go wrong because since the proving, her life has just been like
Even
a weird,
before,
crazy.
like literally.
It, maybe, yeah. But like, I think before it wasn't as hectic. Like, she was
Oh
training a
yeah, I
lot and like
agree.
that was her entire life,
Agreed.
really. Like, or like the big thing she was doing. But post proving, it was like, you know, after the attack
One
and
thing
finding out about the
after the
eclipse and all
other.
of that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
For
exactly. It was
sure,
just
for
like
sure, for sure.
so much going on. And like, I think by this point, she's just like, all right, I can't, like, I think she has to kind of like compartmentalize and focus on what she can handle and deal with and just like not worry about what's not like an immediate problem or what's not going to really help her at the moment. And I think, unlike Beta, she can't like worry about consequences or like risks or I mean all of that to like a certain extent because it's like she's got to take certain gambles and they have to do certain things and
Oh,
somebody
for
has to do it and
sure.
so she's
For
gonna do.
sure. For
So
sure.
I think
Yeah.
it was interesting to kind of see her and Beta clash and then, you know, eventually kind of come together in this really sweet way. But
I think the main clash happens when. Okay, so let's talk about what Beta knows. Beta knows that Far Zenith has three of the other sub functions. I think they have Apollo. What
Apollo,
else?
Artemis, and I'm blanking on the third one. But the big one is
Aletheia?
Apollo because no, Alethea is I think dormant or
Dormant,
just no
okay.
longer a thing. I feel like it's I can try to picture like a little hologram that would pop up with like the different sub functions.
I know.
It's and for some reason I keep being tempted to say Demeter, but it's not Demeter.
It's not Demeter. I know it's
We'll
Apollo,
figure it out.
Artemis, and one other sub-function, let's just say. But here's the thing. She freaks out because they don't have the firepower to take on Far Zenith without Hephaestus, and they haven't gained Hephaestus yet. And that's like a really that really freaks her out. And that moment sends her to a full panic attack kind of thing, which is I mean, what do you think of that? Because I feel like it's understandable, but I can also see how that can cause Aloy to go like, why? Like, why? You know? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean that again, I think like you said, like that's understandable. It's a little, I guess, frustrating in the sense. I think we as players can kind of understand where Beta's coming from, but kind of like Aloy says too, for a good few sequences when Aloy initially talks to Beta, Beta's very like nervous and kind of pessimistic. But I think like looking at it from Beta's point of view, it makes more sense because she took a huge gamble by sending that message to Gaia. And we find out she's the, you know, one who sent the message and found a way to kind of encrypt it and all of that. And she took an even huger gamble by you know, escaping the Zeniths. And she also managed to steal the Gaia kernel that they had. So, you know, everything she's been doing is a huge gamble, and she's hoping for some kind of payoff. And then she comes out, or she learns that what she thought is not really true, and Aloy's actually not that or as close as Beta would like her to be in terms of taking on Far Zenith. So, like, when you look at it that way, it makes a lot of sense that she's like very nervous and, because her life is on the line essentially, and like there's no way that Far
And she's
Zenith is
like,
going, like,
I won't go back there. That's all she keeps saying at some point. Yeah. I
yeah.
understand.
So
But yeah.
it makes more sense when you look at it that way, but also because we've played as Aloy, I think we can kind of understand where Aloy is coming from too. Because I think at one point, Aloy like even says, like, she's really trying her best with Beta, but she's out there every single day risking her life doing what they need done, and you know, she's one woman, she can only do so much. Even with her friends, they're still a small group, and you know, they can only do so much. So it, like, you understand, I think, both sides. But I think you also kind of feel for Beta because I think as kind of nice as her life may have been like depicted at first, we come to find out that it's not like it's not at all that great. Like she's not living like the other Zeniths, who are essentially just like rich people who just couldn't bear the idea of like losing their wealth in the Pharaoh plague. So they just built a ship and like transported all their riches and stuff. And like they just found a way to like, you know, keep adding to that collection because they found a way to like prolong their life or whatever. Beta is essentially just a tool. And you know, I think she's kind of looking at it from a different point of view, where it's like she's only a, like she can only stay alive for as long as she's useful, and if she's not useful, then she's in trouble. And so I think that's also like part of the reason why her like outburst kind of makes sense, because she's risked so much, and if the Zeniths ever catch hold of her again, then it's
It's
more
game
likely that
over.
they'll,
It's game
yeah,
over.
kind of, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
So
Oh, yeah.
yeah, it's I think it's tough to watch at first because it's like, oh, Beta, you don't really need to like Aloy's the last person you need to be like guarded around. But I mean, again, Beta's been through some shit in her
She's
time,
been through
and
her own personal hell, I think. That's true.
yeah. So I think like I think most people would probably understand, like especially once you get the whole story with Beta and you do like, you know, all the cutscenes and you talk to her
Have those
in between quests and
conversations.
stuff, right? Then I think it makes more sense, and it comes across less as like Beta being whiny or complaining, more like, oh my God, she's like just really, really nervous and high strung for a number of reasons, but not the
Yes, I
least of which is like
agree.
she's risking so much and her
Oh,
life
for
is like
sure.
on the line,
It is
so.
on the line, absolutely. But now let's talk about Aloy's conversation with Gaia, because she reveals something about acquiring Hephaestus that is very important and risky as hell. So let's talk about that.
So there's a couple things. Are you referring to Omega clearance or
That and also what has to be done, because of the nature of how Hephaestus is spread out, it has to be done. Gaia mentions that you have to be at two cauldron facilities at once. Basically, it'll take
right?
hours to even do the transfer or whatever this is, or to absorb for Gaia to be able to absorb Hephaestus and Omega clearance as well, which leads us to Demeter and the Quen. We'll talk about all of it. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know, in my playthrough it kind of flowed together to me, at least it made sense
No, it
because I
makes
did
sense.
them
It's
like
okay. We're
together. But
talking about all of this,
no, I know, I'm just saying like
it's
for
fine.
context, like for anybody who did it in a different order, this is like we're doing it in this order because that's I think you probably watched it in a different order, or the walkthrough that you
A
watched
little
did it
bit.
differently.
Little
But
bit.
I think we just did it in this order because that's just how I did it. And
That's okay. It's fine, but
But
let's,
it's, yeah, the Demeter quest line is really interesting because the Forbidden West, like obviously when you get into the Forbidden West you hear about the Tanakh, then you know they're a big part of your journey in the Forbidden West,
Oh,
and they
yeah.
help Aloy and sometimes don't help her, but like they were already, I think, like a known tribe coming into this. But you do get to meet some other, or at least one other tribe, which I thought was really cool because like they were just not at all like teased in the promo material, or at least not to my knowledge.
Not a lot.
But we get to meet the Quen, who are like a more, I don't know how to, like, I guess a more, in a way, militaristic tribe. Oh, that's not really the right adjective to
I
describe
wouldn't
them,
know
but I
how
think
to.
like
I know what
they're
you mean,
more,
though. I.
I'm trying to figure out a way to describe them. That's not like,
They're
I guess they're
like
more
the
concerned about
Nora,
like
but also not. It's a
territorial, I
weird.
think. Territorial might be a better adjective because when Aloy first encounters them, she's looking for Demeter, of course, and like she stumbles into like this almost like an old one ruin. It's like, you know, this abandoned building, and like immediately there's like 12 warriors who are like all trying to kill her.
Pretty
And
much.
it's like she goes through like the different, I guess, regions of the this like outpost essentially, and she's just taking down everybody she sees. And it's like there's so many guys and like so many warriors and like not a single one of them can get her. But I don't think that like at this point that's not really surprising. I think we all know that Aloy can solo like a bandit camp or whatever and come out on top.
Oh yeah.
So
Oh, she's
it's not
so
too surprising
kid.
to see her take on
Yeah.
all these like warriors and stuff. But we learned that this new tribe is called the Quen and they came from across the sea, which is really
So
interesting.
yeah, which is interesting because they talk about crossing a big ocean. So I feel like we might we can look into Pacific Islands, I'm guessing. What do you think?
I don't know because it's very vague. It's not specified. They're like, we came across the
Right.
ocean, but when you look at their ships, it's literally like, the type of ships that like people would have sailed in like the 1600s and stuff. Like they're built a little bit differently, but it's like those are not like high-tech ships, like no state-of-the-art navigation system, satellite, none of that. Like these are wooden ships with like, I mean, I don't even know if they have like crew that like row their ships or what, but it's they're like primitive ships kind of. And so for them to cross the ocean, I would be very surprised if they came from like, I mean, any of the Pacific Islands, which is still like that they're probably closer. If we're
I think they might be
considering just like,
closer to the West Coast, but still within the ocean, like
yeah, I
island
mean, I think
nations,
like the
so.
closest one, so like the closest one that I can think of off the top of my head is like Hawaii, but that's still like some couple thousand miles off the coast of the
Still a
US. And when
distance,
you look at
still
it,
quite a
like,
distance.
it's like it's kind of like a island chain in like the middle of nowhere. And then even like the other Pacific islands, they're like tiny specks in like a very vast
Oh,
ocean.
very
So like
true.
the idea that like these guys somehow navigated like from like Polynesia or wherever, that's really cool, I think. But also just like the game is kind of vague about it, at least to my knowledge. I don't recall ever seeing like a specific place where these guys came from, but we just know across the sea. So I always wonder if it's like, is it as far as like Oceania or whatever, or is it just something like they came from like Vancouver Island, which is like some distance, but it's still like you could probably follow the coastline, I'm assuming, of like Western Canada and US, and you could still like sail a great distance, but you'd be closer to land and I don't know. But yeah, I would be very curious to know where they came from and how they managed it and like
For
how, because
sure.
like it seems to be the first time that any of them have heard of each other. And so like the Quen don't know anything about the Nora. They don't know anything about like the Carja, none of that. They've just kind of been isolated in this like little pocket of land. And they've been like kind of, I guess, minding their own business, but only because like nobody's come looking for them or nobody's like found them.
So far,
And
absolutely,
yeah, but they're really interesting because I think it like we don't see a ton of characters wearing focuses, and the few that
That's
we do
true.
see has it's been like either Aloy has given them the focus or they're like wackos from the first game who had focuses that Aloy then
Like
had to
Olin
like
and
beat.
Silence and the
Yeah,
Eclipse.
Olin, I don't know that I would call them a wacko. All of the Eclipse, they're all probably wackos. I don't know.
Anyway.
But like the Eclipse had focuses and Silence had a focus. And like, those are the only types of people that we've really seen have focuses. But when Aloy clears like this Quen outpost, she meets Alva, who's like a diviner for the Quen, and she has a focus. But unlike Aloy, her focus is an older model and it's very limited in what it can do. But also, I just found Alva such a fascinating character because one, she's just like she's very quirky.
He's very
I maybe that's
bubbly.
sounds
She's like, you
that's the
know,
term,
like,
not quirky, but
no, she is
she's got like a
quirky
very bubbly
too.
personality. She's
She's
very
quirky
sweet,
too,
but
but also bubbly and
she's like what Silence should be. Like so for her too, like gathering data is her job. And so like her job is like go through all this old one
And
stuff
to
and kind of like
understand
parse
and
out.
all those things.
Yeah,
Yeah,
like figure out
exactly.
what the Quen can use because like the Quen are trying to do the same thing, like fight the blight in their own lands. And for Alva, it's
Absolutely.
also kind of personal because her family's not that well off. Like I think they're farmers or they have land or whatever. And so she's trying to do this to support her family too. But her whole like job is essentially just to go through data and like extract information that they could find useful. But that information doesn't go directly to like the Quen public. It's like reviewed by like some like board essentially, and then they pick and choose what they want to release to the public.
Which is
So
kind of
it's all like
sad, wouldn't you
very,
say? Yeah.
it is, but it's also kind of like interesting because Aloy's been the complete opposite. Like she's had no restrictions at all. Like
Which is cool.
she's found information and like she's been able to just see the whole thing, partly because her focus is a newer model, at
Yeah.
least compared to Alva's.
Yeah.
And partly because like the Norga were just like, no, we have nothing to do with old world ruins. We're not going to touch them. And because Aloy was an outcast, she was kind of like, in some
Left to her
ways,
own
left to her own dose.
devices.
Yeah, exactly. So like for her, it's like there's no barriers at all. And like there's nobody to tell her,
Yeah.
like, hey, this is cool that you found this, but
Yeah.
like you need to send this information for a review or whatever. But the Quen, I think, take the job of a diviner very seriously.
Oh yeah.
And so like
Alva takes
Alva
it
is,
very seriously. She really
yeah.
does. She, yeah.
And so like she's like really like that's the other cool thing, that even though she's doing this job, knowing kind of that this like weird board is then gonna like pick and choose and very selectively release information, she's still like determined to find out as much as she can, just on the off chance that
She's
anything
still
could help her
very
people.
upbeat
So
about it, like you said.
yeah, it's
Yeah,
really sweet. But I love like being like the whole she and Aloy team up and get Demeter ultimately. But I just love like that whole sequence because again, I think Aloy's not, she's gotten better at working with people, but I think it's still kind of like a learning
Work in
process for her.
progress.
Yeah. And I think Alva is like one of those characters that you can't help but just love because
Love.
she's
She's
like
like,
super
you know what?
bubbly
Let
and
me
she's
just
always
help her.
cheerful
Yeah.
and and she's so excited about Data too. And it's like things that like Aloy kind of takes for granted. Like Aloy gives her like her own focus,
Yeah.
you know, that she that Alva can use, and it's like the
It
focus
gives
that
her
Aloy wears.
updated
And
data, and it's like,
right,
and the minute
yeah,
she
and
sees
her
it, you're like,
reaction is so
oh
cute.
my God. Yeah, it's very sweet. It is very sweet. So yeah, they do manage to get Demeter, and Alva decides to join the team at the base. But let's talk about what Gaia tells them about getting Hephaestus and what that's going to cost, or what they need to do, which is a lot. So let's talk about that
Yeah, so I think we've mentioned a couple of times like
a little
Omega
bit.
clearance that they
Yeah.
need, and
Yeah. And
I
guess who
don't know if
had
I mentioned
Omega
it, but
clearance?
yeah, but
Anyway,
Gaia
you're gonna rip
basically
him a
says
new
that
one.
like
Yeah, let's go.
oh yeah.
Let's go.
Gaia tells Aloy that unfortunately their plan to get Hephaestus
It's
is a
not
little
as
bit more
simple.
complicated than they,
Yeah,
right? Yeah,
absolutely.
it's not as straightforward. And so trapping him is one thing because he's like in the cloud almost. And so, you know, he can just kind of pop in and out of location. So he has to be pinned down in a physical location, which they've identified as this cauldron Gemini. But Gemini has two data cores, I think. And so
Yeah.
both have to be operated simultaneously. And they need two people to do that. And so previously this mission would not have worked if there weren't two people. But now that Beta has joined the group, Aloy is like, we got it, we're covered. Like it
Yeah.
should be a
Oh,
piece of
yeah.
cake. And so she goes to help, or not help, but more like ask Beta
Not let's not
to
before
join them.
that, before that. Because that's an important moment, and we know why. But
It is,
before
yeah.
that, let's talk about the whole situation where, like, this will leave them exposed because that merge will basically send out a signal so big that it can be tracked quite easily. And the merge itself will take a very long time, right?
Right.
And then for them to even be able to complete this merge, they will need Omega clearance, basically. And these are a lot of ifs and variables here, right?
Right.
So let's talk about the beta variable first, right? Let's talk about that. And then we'll talk about the whole Omega clearance story because that is, we need to rip Ted a new one, okay? And we
Oh
will,
yeah.
right? But I love this scene because again, Beta goes into a full-fledged panic attack because she's like, oh my God, if we go there and the signal, if the Far Zeniths catch the signal and they come after me, I can't risk that. I can't go back to them. I can't, that's not, it really bothers her. And Aloy's
Have
frustrated. She's like, why can't you, why can't you, or stuff like that. And then Aloy's like, I'm not like you. I'm just not like you. I can't bring myself to
But I
hope for
think
that.
the way she words it, though, is she compares them to Elizabeth, and she's like, why can't you do like Elizabeth would do and just do what needs to be done? And I think the really sad part is the way Beta responds, where she's like, don't you think I would have done that if I couldn't? She's like, I've spent like, I like, because she's reviewed all the footage from Aloy's old focus and even her new one. And like, so she knows a lot about Aloy at this point, or enough at least to kind of say these things and know for sure. She's like saying that like she has a defect, and she
Oh
can't
my
figure
God,
out
that's
what
just
specifically Aloy has that she didn't, because they were both so similar. Like, they both grew up an
they're
outcast, they
supposed to
had
be
no
similar.
one. And yeah, and so that like we get this really sweet moment where Aloy, who's kind of not really been focusing or thinking too much on Rost and his sacrifice, shows Beta, and she's like, the difference is I had him. And then
Oh,
Beta's kind of like
that
confused, and she's like, but
scene.
he's like cold, and he was so like
Distant.
distant, he was gonna abandon you. And Aloy's just like, in his own way, he did love me, and that
He
was enough. And like
did.
that, I don't know, it's just it's such a like a
That
it really
scene
tugs at your
got to me,
heartstrings.
man, because it's like,
I
I
know
think, but here's the thing. I think she hadn't processed Rost being gone
Well, I
properly.
don't think she had the time. Yeah, like, I
That's
mean,
true.
it
That's
part of it is
true
she didn't have the time, and the other part is I
because,
think she
yeah,
didn't want to.
that's
And you
another
can't really
thing.
blame her, because like
No,
for so
no.
long he was her whole world, in the
He
sense like he was the
was.
only person who would talk to her, the only person that I guess could. And he was so instrumental in like helping her get to approving and
Mulder,
helping her, like,
exactly. All those things,
yeah. And like he
for
set her on this
sure.
path that, you know, turned into this crazy journey that she's on now. But it's like so much of what she learned
Was from him.
So like I feel like it's one of those things where like obviously she cared about him very
She
deeply, and
did.
it's
Oh,
always hard to
yes.
process, you
She
know, the
cared
loss
about
of a
him
loved
deeply
one.
enough to break the tribe's law for him. Like, she was like, I don't care. I'll be breaking the law, but I'm not gonna just let you go like this. It's like,
So like
and to think
obviously
that
he
she
meant a lot to
lost
her.
him, it's just,
I know, which is why I think like it makes sense that she kind of either doesn't want to process it or can't
I
process it,
agree.
whether it's because, you know, emotionally she just can't work through it, or because just it's plot-wise she doesn't have the time.
It's,
But
I feel
I
like
think
it's both,
she has a
like you
point,
said.
because yeah, I mean, Rost was like, he was firm and probably tough on her, but I don't think he wasn't without compassion, and he obviously cared about Aloy
Oh, he
enough to like raise
did.
her and train her and all of that. And so
I think he
I
did
think like,
love her. He wanted what was best
yeah,
for her. He was
right. And he
like,
comes back in like the end to save her at the proving, even though that results in his death and all of that. But I think it's just like the way Aloy kind of shows Beta and frames it, when she's like, yeah, I mean, he was tough and he was firm and he was all these things that Beta said he is, but in his own way he did care for her,
And
and
she
for her
also
that was
says, you
enough.
don't have a defect. That's not
I
on
know,
you.
it's so
Which is the,
sweet.
it's just,
I think
it's a
it's probably what
moment.
Beta needed to hear.
It's a moment. And I
I think
love
it's also
it.
just it's so moving too, because for so long Beta has been so distant, but like during this conversation they both are kind of sitting, and then Beta just
Next
kind of
to
like
each
scoots
other,
closer to
then
her,
it's just,
and it's so sweet, because it's like
it's like a bonding
it's not
moment.
explicitly stated, but yeah, it's like this is kind of Beta going out on a limb and like trying this whole trust thing. She's gonna trust Aloy and put her faith in Aloy, and she's like, I believe in you. But and she agrees to help at Gemini and all of that, but she does ask Aloy to make a very difficult promise, which is
Promise.
that if this whole thing goes south and the Zeniths
Don't
capture
let
her,
them take me.
yeah, she says like she doesn't want to go back, and it's, you know, she doesn't explicitly state it, but the implication is that Aloy is going to, or that she would rather not be a pawn for the Zeniths if it
Ever
can be solved.
again.
And
Ever
Aloy can,
again.
exactly, yeah, Aloy basically has to kill her before that happens. So it's a huge thing. And I think Aloy promises to do it only because she doesn't expect it to happen. But you know, it's a hard promise to make, and I think whether
It is.
she made it or didn't make it would be difficult either way.
Yeah, dude. Now let's talk about the Omega clearance bit because we've sorted out through this bit, right? But let's talk about the Omega clearance bit because, like I said, we need to rip Ted Pharaoh a fucking new one. Okay, we really do.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it
I'm
because
just,
go for it. Go for it. We
I'm
need to
still
rip this
like,
guy a new one. Please.
I still
Please.
get like so much rage just thinking about
Same.
his like
His
action in the first
arrogance,
game. And
his
yeah, and
lack of
it's so funny because,
responsibility,
yeah,
literally.
we, well, all of that, but it was, I find it just kind of funny too, because when we did the first game, when we revisited it
Yeah.
and did our kind of like weird discussion type thing recently, I kept saying that like Ted, like there's no point in him doing what he did because he wasn't gonna live, or like he wasn't gonna be around long enough to enjoy his wealth or whatever. Turns out I was wrong.
That
And I'm very
asshole.
disappointed that I was wrong, but
Guys, we're trying to keep this PG-13, but when Ted Pharaoh's in the picture, we're gonna call him names. We are sorry. Go
I
on,
would be very
please.
surprised if anybody didn't call him names, but he really is a jerk of a human, and it's kind of ridiculous that
Yeah.
he ends up where he ends up compared to more deserving characters like Elizabeth. So, but this
Liz.
Omega clearance thing is just like, to me, it's like, how do you? So we know a little bit about Omega clearance from the first game, like very little, in the sense
A
that
little
when
bit.
he murdered all the alphas, which, you know,
Yes.
let's he murdered it, let's not call it like
It is
anything else.
murder.
He
No,
made a
it's
blue
literally
blooded
murder.
murder.
Yeah,
Um, he
cold-blooded
had to
murder.
he yeah,
Yeah.
well, the thing is, he had to program, I guess, like this new level of clearance, or have it built in, or whatever the
Yeah.
case is, because something had to override alpha clearance. So he
Yeah.
makes this Omega clearance, or has it made for him, which, and like, my thing is, like, at no point did this come across as like stupid to you, or like unethical, or like immoral. Like,
Again, if
you
Liz had been around for this, she would have literally killed him. I'm putting
I would
that
like to think
mildly.
maybe she would have killed him there.
I would have and I'm saying this mildly, and I'm putting this mildly. Killing him is not enough. I'm being very honest here. But okay, please continue because there's more to this. There's even more.
There is, unfortunately, but it ends up being kind of like a funny, if not like really odd, quest line. It's very
I get,
unique, I think, as far as like the serious quests go. But yeah, so we know from the first game that Ted had this Omega clearance that overrides Alpha clearance, and in order to get, you know, this whole plan underway, Aloy and Beta also need Omega clearance. And so their
Yeah, to
goal is
get
to
into the
journey
cauldron and do all this.
right. So their goal is to kind of go to Ted's bunker, like his doomsday bunker, where he supposedly waited out the end of the Pharaoh Plague, and get his
Whatever.
Omega clearance, and then proceed, you know, business as usual. Of course, anybody who's played the game knows it goes horribly south.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe not horribly, but horribly for some characters, because in order for them to do that, Aloy has to go back to Quen territory, or like this
Quen
outpost
territory.
essentially that they've
Because
made.
Alva knows about this. Alva knows
Yeah.
about where she can go to get Omega clearance, which is a bunker in Thebes, which is somewhere in the Bay Area, I think.
Yeah, I think it's like San Francisco, I guess.
Yeah.
Because it's like, when you see the map, it's like in the region the Golden Gate Bridge ruins are. So it's in San Francisco, or like somewhere very close by. And yeah, they find this bunker, or like the Quen have already found this bunker in Thebes.
Yeah, but they have no
They're
idea how to
just
open it, basically.
right. And we also meet this very interesting character called the CO, who is like the leader of this expedition of Quen,
He's
from
a
like this
character,
group
but
of,
yeah.
he really is. And I think like he says he's like the nephew or like cousin to like the Quen Emperor. So he's like the highest ranking official, I guess, leading this Quen expedition. And so he's got like a bunch of people working for him, but for this portion of like their expedition, he's going to like personally lead a group of people into Thebes and into
Thebes.
Ted's bunker. So Aloy and Alva are kind of forced to put up with him. And it's really funny too, because there's like a bit where at one point he comes across as like very arrogant and cocky like from the
He
start,
is,
but
yeah.
it reaches like new levels where like one point like kind of randomly he's like spouting his nonsense and you know the usual car like cocky arrogant bullshit. And to me at least it felt random, but he just like all of a sudden popped up and he was like, "I'm Ted Farrow incarnate," and it's like, what? Like that's not the kind
That's
of
not a
person
good
you aspire to
thing,
be.
sir. That is not a good thing.
Or at least
Like,
maybe he thought it was a good thing, but like not the type of thing that we as players, I think, would aspire to be. Like,
oh
no,
God.
I would be very surprised if any player was like, "I wish we could be Ted in the game."
Oh God.
The only benefit of being Ted in the game, maybe, would be to see like his point of view as like his entire empire crumbled beneath him. But beyond that,
Well,
I don't
he would
even,
have
and even that, I
deserved
don't know
it
if it's
though.
worth it.
That he would have
He
deserved.
would have, yeah.
Like, you
But
know.
I just find it so funny because it's like, there's so many points throughout this game where it's like these people, like the people of Aloy's time have, in a way, almost like appropriated things from the old ones
Yeah.
that, like, to us are just like random, like normal things that nobody really thinks about. But like to them, it's like a huge deal because like the Quen, they don't know about the Odyssey and the Far Zenith
Yeah.
experiment or whatever. So like they also worship, or maybe if not worship, they kind of like hold some of the Zeniths in
Old
very
ones
high
in high
regard.
regard, yeah.
And yeah, including like jerks like Eric, which is unfortunate. But I just found it so funny because like the Quen's leader is called the CEO. So it's like some weird like bastardization of like CEO. And I'm
Right?
guessing that they must have like picked it up off of like some old one plaque or something. And they're like, "That's the
Yeah.
name, the CEO."
That's a cool
And so
name,
like,
the CEO.
yeah. And so the CEO is about as arrogant as probably some CEOs are. I don't know. But
Well.
he pops up, but like to me, I always felt like that was very random again. That he just like he I mean him being cocky and like arrogant, that was like normal because he doesn't really dial it back from the time you meet him to the
Yeah,
end.
he
But
doesn't.
he just like at some point he's just like, "Yeah, I'm like I'm Ted Farrow reborn." And I think he there's this bit where he tries to make Aloy wear Elizabeth's raiment, and at first she's like, "No, I refuse." And then I think he like threatens her with Alva and like, "Oh, her safety is on you. So like if you want her safe or if you don't want my guards to kill her."
Oh,
And then Aloy's
God.
like, "Fine, give me the clothes, I'll wear them." And then I think after she wears them, she has a comment about them being like very itchy or something. Which is, I don't know, it's like a
Oh,
very small moment of
child.
levity in a kind of otherwise heavy scene. But
Yeah,
the big
dude.
thing from this quest is really, I think, the thing that angers me most. Which is that I was wrong, and in the last episode or the revisited episode that we did, when I
Yeah.
was like, "Ted's not going to benefit from any of this," unfortunately, he can because this jackass,
At least
I
he
think
thinks he can.
genetically, yeah, he found a way to like genetically experiment on himself or something, and so he found a way to prolong his life,
Ugh.
and so he sealed himself in this bunker with like a harem of women. And some
That's
other
so
people for like essential
gross.
functions,
Like, oh
yeah.
my God. What is
And
your
he
problem,
managed to
bro?
survive, yeah. But I think that's what I mean. There's a number of things that rub me the wrong way, but like the biggest is
Yeah.
that Ted Farrow, of all people, survived when Elizabeth Sobeck, who is like the only person seemingly who is like had her head screwed on straight and was trying to do the right thing, was like one of the first people to die. And it's like that's so unfair
It
because
is
Ted did not deserve
unfair.
to live and Liz did not deserve to die. But yeah, we find out that Ted managed to prolong his life and survived the plague in the 1,000 years and has made it to Aloy's time. And yeah, he's had like a he attempted to have like a harem of women because I guess his goal was to like just procreate or like make more kids
That
and just
is
like I don't know,
even worse.
it's
That makes this
very
worse.
yeah. But I think the most annoying thing beyond him surviving is that he like the way he describes it, he's like, "Oh, when these people pop out of Eleuthia in the future after the you know the plague and everything has been resolved, they're gonna need like somebody to shepherd them and guide them, and who better than me?" And so he was like kind of
Dude,
talking himself and like building
dude.
himself as like a godlike figure, and it's like you are the last person that should be trusted with like any of these people or like just
Exactly.
anything in general. Just like just go
Anyone
stay in
who
your little
lets
bunker
them,
and don't do
anyone who lets
anything.
you near their child is a fucking psychopath. Like, stop. Okay, I'm sorry, but no. Just no.
Yeah. But that's like, to me, that's what really makes me mad
Yeah.
because, again, Liz did not deserve to die. There were better people on Zero Dawn who probably perished, who did not deserve to. None of those
Like
alphas that
all
he
these
murdered deserved
alphas,
to go out that way.
exactly.
Yeah, whether or not he had beef with them, it's irrelevant. Like that was not the way they should have died. And he murdered them too. So it's like, you can't. I don't know. It's not, I just think it's just very
Let's
unfair,
talk about
but
your
because
conscience
Mewtwo,
now, Ted.
I know.
I
The
mean,
good news is though
seriously,
that
bro.
the CEO has one, he makes one good decision, which is that when they find Ted, the CEO's like, all right, that's a monster. We're not going to deal with that. And he gives the orders to have Ted killed, which I think it's implied that Ted does die because you never see him on screen. You just hear him.
Yeah.
Because it's implied that he, even though he's prolonged his life and he's managed to last until this
He's
point in
turned into
time,
some
he's.
freakish monster-like thing or
I would
something.
assume so. Like, I always kind of
We don't
picture him as
exactly
looking kind
see
of like
him.
Frankenstein's
Yeah.
monster, but
Yeah.
yeah, you never see him. And I think it was actually really interesting because I was reading an article about that in on the internet recently, and I think the article had like interviewed some of the devs or like, you know, somebody on the
Okay.
staff, and they mentioned that that was intentionally done because anything that they could show us might not be as scary as like what's actually there or like what we could imagine. And I think they also like part of the reason they didn't do it was because like horror wasn't really Guerrilla's wheelhouse and like jump scares
Ooh.
weren't really their thing. But the way they explained like why they didn't show Ted was actually, I thought, really interesting, and it made a lot of sense that like I think it's more like sinister that way, that like you never really know what he looks like and all of that. But I think one of like the senior writers or somebody described it as like they kind of envisioned Ted as looking more like cancerous than anything, if that makes sense. But either way, I mean, regardless of what he looks like, I think the implication is that he is so far removed from like what
Yeah.
he was that there's like really no point in him doing anything he did. But I think the nice thing about this game is that like as you explore and even like collect things that like collectibles, like data points and whatnot, they all tie into like the quests in different ways. And especially once you get into Thebes, there's so many like different data points and stuff that kind
Yeah.
of shine a light on like what Ted was doing and how he was. And you kind of see these pieces fall into place of like he was, you know, after the Pharaoh Plague and Zero Dawn and everything, he was disgraced, but like he still built this bunker, had this harem, had like employed these people,
And
and
he
then just
killed
went like
them off
psycho.
whenever they found out about his involvement in the old world
Different
or
things, yeah.
something. Yeah, that was just,
Yeah.
dude, this guy just no,
Yeah.
just
Not
no,
enough
you
words to
know?
describe him, but
Yeah.
yeah, I was very disappointed that I was wrong. At
I
least if
under
everyone is like,
I will
I don't mind being
understand
wrong,
why.
but I was like, of all the things, like I wish it wasn't Ted, because my big thing in Zero Dawn, like, the only thing that kind of made me happy about Ted was like he must have died. Like that was my assumption that he died and like perished
Yeah.
with like the rest of, you know, the old ones in the 21st century. But
Yeah.
no, this jackass found a way to prolong his life and live it. Like that was a thing too that I think is so clever about this game. Like, 'cause when you see the Zeniths and you learn who they really are, I feel like I'm kind of dumb. So I just like, if I can think this, other people must have thought it too. But I was
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
if they can survive from the 21st century, who's to say others couldn't survive? And like, we never hear about Ted's death or anything in the first game. And like, you know, obviously he like murders all these alphas and he's like, I can't let you guys do this. And it's like, well, he seems shady enough to have like an ulterior motive and like have another plan. I was like fully expecting some sort of information on Ted, but not necessarily expecting him to come back only because I didn't think the writers would actually write that in, but they did. So now Ted has been alive for over 1,000 years.
Oh, God.
And I think the only part that annoyed me was that Aloy herself didn't get to like end him, because I feel
Yeah.
like she deserves to. For a number of reasons, not the least of which, everything that happened in Angela's time can be traced back
Yeah.
to Ted.
It, oh, for
But
dude, for sure, for sure. For sure. We talked about this. We talked about this when we were talking about the first game. Everything, the state of Aloy's world as it is in her time, definitely this guy's fault. For sure, this guy's fault.
Right.
But they finally
So
do
I just
get to
I
met. Yeah, go ahead, go ahead, go ahead.
no, I was just gonna say, like I said, I just wish that Aloy had been the one to kill him
For
because of
sure.
everything that he's put like her through and her entire world through. But
Yeah.
regardless of who kills him at this point, Ted is dead.
Ted.
It's just
Ted
sad that it
is
happened in
dead.
Forbidden West.
Yeah. And they finally managed to get Omega clearance and hightail it out of there, basically. But let's talk about what happens at Cauldron Gemini, because heartbreak, a lot of crazy stuff.
That's a tough
Let's talk
one.
about
Yeah,
it. Yeah,
it
it
starts
is.
off, I think, like the way a lot of their stuff does, where
It's
it's like things seem
starts
to be
off
going according to
optimistic.
plan.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
and then it goes haywire very quickly. And
Yeah.
unfortunately, I think in getting to Gemini, they took a gamble, which is, they left the base and they physically
Yeah.
brought Gaia and like
Yes.
they brought
Because
Gaia
they
in like a
had
weird
to.
contraption.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so like the base is exposed, but beyond that, Minerva can't really conceal their location anymore. And
Yeah.
I think the way Gaia describes this, like anybody who's capable of like looking could potentially notice them.
Yeah.
So it's a chance that they just kind of had to take. And so
Like you said, a
they like
gamble.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that like when they get there, they're like they go about their plan, setting things into motion. But unfortunately, they either because they were easily detectable, or maybe because they didn't take into account like the level of advancement the Far Zenith people had, they're kind of like ambushed by like Gerard, Tilda, and Eric. And
Yes.
it goes about as well as you would imagine when one group of people is extremely overpowered compared to the others. And
Yes.
so poor Beta is unfortunately hauled back to
Taken.
the Odyssey
Yeah.
or like
Yeah.
back to the Far Zenith base.
Yeah.
And Eric in I guess quest to piss off Aloy as much as he can. He kills Varl,
He
who's defending
does.
Aloy, which is just such a sad moment because it's like, oh, he was the most wholesome guy, and of all the
He
characters, I did not want
was.
to see him go. But it's also, I think, like one of those things where it's like he unintentionally kind of like lights a fire within Aloy. Like I don't think
Oh,
he meant
yeah.
to, but like at that point, she's like, oh, she is pissed, and you do not want
She,
to be on the receiving end of her
dude,
attack. And
yes.
it's just, and I think also like Aloy's reached a point where she's just like so done with everything. Like she
She's
goes through
like
all of
she
this,
has.
and she
I
puts in
would
all this
say she
effort,
has
and
zero fucks to. She has zero fucks left to give at this point,
kind of, yeah. Because like I
right?
mean, to her it must also be like,
Yeah.
what is the point of putting in all this time and effort only for her to like repeatedly lose people like every single time,
Exactly.
like something big goes down, like whether it was the proving and she lost Rost, or like now losing
Yeah.
Varl. And it's just, and like even at the proving itself, beyond just losing Rost, like Vala died, Bast died, like there's just so many people who died at the proving, and like she did her best to save them then, but she couldn't save everybody, and like even now
Yeah.
she couldn't save everybody. So like I'm sure like that kind of like survivor's guilt in a way
She
is kind of
couldn't
weighing on
keep her
her.
promise to Beta. She couldn't. And it's
Yeah,
just,
that too. But like also you can't blame her because like how do you
it's
take the
not her
life of somebody
fault.
that you
No,
like
no.
just met? And
It's, I'm
yeah,
not even
and
saying it's her
honestly,
fault. It's just, yeah. It's just very
yeah,
sad.
it is, yeah. But like I'm just saying, like I don't, like personally I can't blame her for not taking
Yeah.
Beta's life because it's hard. Like how do you look somebody in the eye and like somebody who's innocent and somebody that you care about in any way, shape, or form,
Yeah.
and then like just take their life because they like begged you to. And
Oh,
honestly, I
that's
think
hard.
even
That's
though
really hard. Yeah.
it is, but I think even though like there was so much going on in that moment, I think Aloy, or I would like to think anyway, that she recognized that Beta was probably more used to the Zeniths alive than dead. So like for
Yeah.
now, for like the short, like the
He
near
maybe
future
even
at
as
least.
leverage or something, you
Yeah,
know?
maybe. But like that's what I was like trying to say. But like I think for like the foreseeable future, like or at least a very short period of time, like following this kind of tussle at Gemini, Beta's safety is kind of guaranteed because the Farzina people need her. So as long as they need her, they're not gonna like kill her, but it's still going to be a race against the clock to get Beta out of their clutches. But unfortunately, Aloy herself doesn't really have too much say in that matter because even though she does her best to hold off the Zeniths, they're still overpowered. And so for the second time, she barely escapes the Zeniths, but
But where she
surprisingly, or maybe
escapes
unsurprisingly,
to, yeah, let's talk about that.
So like in this fight, I think like the way it's like presented, it's like some sort of energy blast or something from like one of the Zenith shields is supposed to hit her, and like I think she's kind of again like a little banged up again
I
during
think
this
she's
whole
paralyzed
ordeal.
or
But
something for a little bit because she can't exactly move to do anything for a little bit at that point.
maybe, but I think it's more just that, like, it's a fight, and like any
And that
fight, she gets banged
she's
up
banged
and
up. That too.
bruised and all that. And the only reason she escapes is because Tilda just kind of pulls a 180 and just like randomly switches sides and kind of hides Aloy and brings her away. And so after this whole fight, Aloy wakes up in a strange location, which she later discovers is Tilda's mansion, and the same place that she would have like the secret data channel with Beta.
Beta,
And
yeah.
so Tilda kind of presents herself as like an ally, and she's like, "I'm here to help," and all that. And Aloy is just like, "Why should I
Skeptical.
believe anything you say?" Exactly. Because, like, I mean, again, why should she?
Why should she?
But
You're absolutely right. Why should she?
Tilda surprisingly picked up her broken focus from the Hades Proving Lab, repaired it, and then didn't toss it, but like manually, I guess, read the data or like extracted it and just like maybe absorbed it all at once. I don't know. But it seems like she went through like memory by memory or whatever and like watched everything that was like recorded on that focus, which is probably a lot. And she kind of like presents herself to Aloy as like an ally and a friend, and also kind of like a mentor because she's like got this plan about how she wants to take down the Zeniths. But Aloy's like,
And
no,
how
we're
she
done with your plan. We're doing
cared
it
about
my way.
Elizabeth and knew her and all those things.
I think that comes in like a later portion,
No,
like in one of the later like cut scenes or
she
whatever.
doesn't
But
mention that just now, but she does mention that she cared for Beta because she was a clone of Elizabeth and all those things. A little bit of that. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, again, Aloy doesn't really believe her, and
Of
you
course
can't
not.
blame her. But I love the moment that follows because Tilda spends a lot of time just like kind of talking herself up and trying to, convince
Be
Aloy or
chummy.
persuade her. Yeah, like
Basically,
she's trying to come across as like not a threat, but Aloy's like, no, I'm done. I don't trust you, but like we're gonna do this my way. And so
So
Aloy
she
comes up
asked
with
her
her
to
own
open up a
plan.
data channel to Beta one last time. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so there's this like super moving scene where she whispers something to Beta ahead of like this huge plan that they are now setting into motion. And when Tilda asks like what Aloy said, Aloy is just like, "That's
That's
between me
between
and
me
my
and my
sister."
sister. And that
And
is
it's just, I
so
don't know.
cool. It's a
It's so
moment.
simple,
It's
but
a moment.
yeah, especially because I think like maybe some part of Aloy liked having a sister, which is like somebody who
Maybe.
could relate to her unique situation. But then
And
she
being
found out, of course, that
nerds.
Beta was,
Nerds.
but
But yeah,
I think
I
at the
know what you mean.
start, like Beta was like the complete opposite of her. So like at the very beginning, they clashed a lot, but like over time, they kind of became closer. And then
And
by
I
the end,
love
it's
how
like, this is
Beta's like,
somebody that Aloy.
as long as I know that you're coming for me, I can deal with this. It's okay. And I love that too. It's like,
Because it's so sweet. It's like they literally just like met very recently, but like there's already like that bond and that connection there because they're in a very unique position. Like there's nobody else like them who is made in Elizabeth's image. And they've kind of led very similar lifestyles, and the only difference is like when you kind of break it down, it's like Beta got more of like the techie stuff in terms of like knowledge. So she's like very good with like all that and like, you know, the tech stuff and like the Xenic stuff and whatnot. And Aloy has been more of like, I guess like, I don't know how to put this without sounding so stupid, but it's like she's been like more physical, if that makes any sense. Like,
Brawn? A little bit of brawn, kind of, but
yeah,
she's
because it's
also,
not like she
but
doesn't
here's
have
the
brain,
thing,
but.
Aloy's smart. She's pretty smart. She's also a nerd, but she's I but Beta has had the advantage of knowing more about old world technology than Aloy does up until this point, at least because of all the information that she had access to, pretty much. That's what I'd say at this point, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's right, or a fair assessment.
So let's talk about what happens next because there's still a lot going on. Zoe gives us some interesting news.
Yeah, there's a very
Let's talk
moving
about that
kind
too.
of cutscene slash sequence where when you go back to the base, Aloy meets up with Zoe, who has kind of, you know, I don't know how or where they found the time, but she and Varl have been like an item and they've been like dating, but like, you know, not, I guess, a conventional relationship in the sense they're in the middle of like a huge fight, and so they don't really have time to like go on proper dates. But like Farrell's been trying and, you know, doing his best. And so when you kind of hold like this little funeral for him, Zoe has like a really moving speech. And then at the end of it, she reveals that she's pregnant with Farrell's kid. And so my question after seeing that scene was like, why is she going into battle after this? Because she joined Aloy in the final fight. But my guess is, I don't know, it's so weird because like part of me was like, Aloy, don't let her come because like she's
But
having a freaking baby.
it's also
But
like
at
you
the
need
same
every
time,
person you can get kind of thing too,
kind of, but also more than that, it's like obviously Aloy's not the only one grieving Varl, and if anybody wants him, like any of the Zeniths dead as much as Aloy, it's probably Zoe. And so I think I would like to think anyway that the main reason she lets Zoe continue to like tag
is
along
for
is
that.
because,
No, I agree
yeah,
with
and
you.
like Zoe deserves closure and she deserves to have like exact her
That
vengeance
moment,
on Eric and whoever she wants to, and Aloy's not gonna be the one to stop her. So it's equal parts like amazing but also frustrating because it's,
and
I mean, it's a huge
scary.
risk.
Like,
Yeah, and it's like
excuse?
you don't want this baby to die like just because you could, like you got caught in some sort of situation that could have been avoided.
Avoided.
But again, at the same time, like Varl is dead and I'm sure Zoe wants revenge as much as Aloy,
Of
and I just thought it was like
course.
really cool that Aloy just
It
didn't say anything.
is, but let's talk about Aloy's plan a little bit, right? Because she's
And
convinced
a clever
Tilda,
one.
but and it's a clever one, but let's talk about what her plan is at this point, because she has to, her plan is to get Regala's machines to storm the Zenith base, right? That's her whole plan at this
Kind of
point.
like her army. So Tilda reveals that there's been like a lot of different kind of pawns in this game. So like we over the course of the game, you learn about like these different factions and stuff. So like Silence, for example, created this like Eclipse 2.0 cult called the Sons of Prometheus.
Has he
And
learned
through
nothing?
them,
Oh my God.
yeah, clearly, through them, he like reached out to Regala, and so they kind of exchanged, or like they made a deal. So Silence taught Regala how to override machines and like use them for her cause. And in return, once Hikara was eliminated and the Tanakh were brought under Regala's control, she would then turn her attention to the Far Zenith base and, on behalf of Silence, use the rebels and her army to storm the Far Zenith base. Unfortunately for them, neither of them counted on Aloy, who kind of just threw a wrench in their plans. And so she's gotten rid of like Silence's like puppet system or whatever you want to call it,
She's
because she's
basically
eliminated the
gotten
Sons of
rid of the
Prometheus.
Sons of Prometheus. Yeah, exactly.
And
What do you
you
think
know,
now,
without
Silence?
them,
But yeah, I
yeah,
know.
without them, it's not, you know, he has less resources and less ability to kind of keep up his end of the deal and all of that. And or like less resources too, to like make sure Regala upholds her end of the deal, because like I'm
That
sure if
too.
Regala knew he didn't have certain things, she'd probably double cross him. But she never finds out, or at least to my
Yeah.
knowledge, I don't believe she finds out.
Yeah.
But yeah,
But let's talk
so
about how
Simon's
she
plan
gets
was like
back
to,
to not. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. But there's lots to
I don't know,
talk
I was just gonna
about
say
here.
like
There's
so
lots to
many
talk
things.
about
I don't
here.
even know that we're
Yeah.
doing this game any justice, but it is,
Yeah.
it's so much fun to play.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Sansa's essentially just gonna use Regala's rebels and her army as like a distraction, and he was gonna enter the base from like a different point and then attack the Zenith. And then he had the
Yeah.
weapon, like he was the one that made the weapon that broke their shields. And
Bro,
so with their
exactly,
shields down, they're
exactly.
just regular people.
Yeah.
And so they'd be much easier targets. But again, none of them accounted for Aloy, and she has been a completely different, like she's been like a wild card essentially. Like they don't really know what she's gonna do. And so it kind of throws a wrench in like their individual plans, but like this, you know, bigger scheme that Silence has concocted, it's definitely out the window. So Aloy is like, all right, we're gonna keep his existing plan, we're just gonna modify it so it suits my needs, and then we're just gonna proceed.
Yeah,
So
pretty much.
she decides to contact Silence, and she decides like, we're gonna have Silence do his usual thing, like provide us with that, you know, shield breaking technology, and then he's gonna still infiltrate the Zenith base. But Aloy was gonna defeat Regala herself and then take her army and use the army as kind of like fodder to like, you know, breach the Zenith
Zenith
compound.
base.
And yeah, and then, you know, while all that commotion is going on, that kind of frees up Aloy and her team in a sense to go in and do what they need to
And
do. So
get
it's a
Beta
very ambitious
back,
plan,
basically,
right? But it works really well, and we get, I think, one of the coolest sequences in my opinion after this, because when they were in Gemini, Beta had given Aloy an override ability for a Sunwing, which up until this point we've never been able to ride. But now you have a flying mount, and oh my God, it is so much fun to use that
That
wing,
is the
and it's
most
so
exciting
convenient.
thing ever. Like
It's so much fun.
the mechanics of it, especially when you call your Sunwing and it basically takes you up in its talons and flips you on its back. Like, that is like the
The
coolest
animation
thing
is, oh my
ever.
God.
Oh my God.
It's so versatile too, which is what I love. Like, in the sense, you can deploy your shield wing and then hop onto your sun wing from your shield wing. You can be on the ground, and then, like you said, the sun will pick you up and throw you on its back. You can be free falling. You can grapple onto the sun wing. Like, it's so versatile. I love it. And I
It's
love that the devs
awesome.
weren't just like, you can only mount this thing in one way, to only get on it in one way. It really, like, you can do whatever you want. And then you can, you
It's
know,
pretty
land off
cool.
the sun wing too at different points. And you know, do like tall necks or get hard to reach collectibles or whatever. So it definitely makes it
No
easier,
need
and it
to
was so
climb
much
tall necks
fun
anymore. Just fly
to
up
mount
high
that
and
thing. But
land
Aloy
on them.
heads back to
Basically, just fly up high and land on
yeah.
tall
I
necks
mean,
and finish them off.
there's one tall neck in, I think it's called Steel Sands or something like that. I could be wrong, but there's one tall neck in the game that you cannot, until you get to Wings of the Ten, like the main mission called Wings of the Ten, you can't do that tall neck, because it's just like a tall neck, just like in an open deserty area, just walking in circles, and there's nothing to climb, nothing to jump
So you
onto.
need the sun wing,
So
basically.
yeah, you need the Sunwing. Although I've been told, or I've read on the internet, that you could use your shield wing to get it, but like that seems very finicky, and it seems like you need to time a bunch of things, and you know, a whole series of events needs to happen before that does. So I don't know how easy that is, but there's a main mission where you have to ride a Sunwing, and then as part of that mission, you like do that tall neck and you hop off the Sunwing, and it's so much fun. But
Oh my God.
I think Aloy takes a page from Regala's book and kind of makes an entrance when she challenges Regala to a
And
final
let's see
duel.
what the Tanakhs have to say about it, because like she flew on the wings of the ten. It's like
Yeah. For them,
it's a
it's a
sight.
huge deal.
It's a sight to behold. Like literally, like, oh
Yeah.
my God. So cool. And this is when we actually get the one-on-one fight that we've been waiting with against Regala. So let's talk about that too.
Yeah, I mean, that was a little bit frustrating, but also satisfying. So when you fight her, you're in like, a standard arena, and there's like different levels to the fight and all of that. But you ultimately do subdue her. And when you do, you have the option to kill her or spare her. I spared her in my playthrough. And also, I think if you spare her, you get one additional person who will accompany you to the Zenith base and will then kind of
Which is
split off
always
and do their thing.
useful.
So yeah, which is, yeah, it's a huge asset. Which is, and it's also a shame that they didn't think of this like sooner, but yeah, they have this like sort of fight in this arena, and obviously Regal is defeated, and then when if you spare her, which I did, she'll join your team and essentially help you. And her whole thing too is like she has a very interesting outlook, because she's like she wants, because Aloy defeated her in a battle, essentially in a fair fight, she's like, all right, fine, my life is forfeit, but you promised me blood and death, so give it to me. And so I think for Regal, it's like this is like a more honorable way to go out, because Aloy refuses to kill her. If you make the choice to spare her. But it's just very interesting to talk to Regala once, because she goes back to the base with you
She
right
does.
before the final mission. And if you talk to her, she has a very interesting conversation. But yeah, she ends up helping. And then Silence, of course, has been contacted and persuaded to join. And even he's, I think, as impressed as he can muster. Like, he's not really in touch or in tune with emotions and feelings.
Oh no.
So it's a miracle anytime he can display like an ounce of emotion. And I love that Aloy keeps like commenting on that. But yeah, I mean, you get your group back together in the base, one final time, unfortunately, minus Farl, but the rest of your comrades and allies are all there, along with Silence, Regal, and Tilda, who, Aloy is still not entirely convinced is going to help. But they do storm the Zenith compound, and we get the kind of really cool reveal once they get into like the Zenith compound, and we find out specifically what Aloy had asked Beta to do. And again, it's a huge gamble, but it pays off and it buys them some time. It helps them in the short term, may create problems in the long term. But again, Aloy's all about taking gambles, I guess, and she kind of has to. So she has Beta in like inject Hephaestus into the Zenith
This is
like
such a
printer lab.
gamble.
And with that sort of technology, Hephaestus can make as many machines as he wants, big deadly machines, whatever he wants to do, what it wants to do, it can do them. So
But the gamble
they.
is it lets Hephaestus loose again, basically.
Right. Yeah. But on the bright side, they now have their own personal army of Thunderjaw, Slaughter Spines, all sorts of machines
All
that can
sorts
now
of cool,
fight
crazy
the
machines.
Zeniths, because the Zeniths have their own army of machines. They have Spectres, which you fight at a couple of points during the main game. And there's a lot of them. There's a good number, and certainly more than, Aloy and her little group can handle. And the gamble of like injecting Hephaestus into the labs, the Far
Kind of,
Zenith's
it
like
does
lab
pay
printer or
off.
whatever. Yeah, it does pay off. And beyond that, I just think it's just like a really cool scene
It
to see. It's like a
is.
very brief like cutscene type thing where you just see like a bunch of different like machines, like Slaughter Spines and Thunderjaws, like just like tearing into Spectres and ripping them apart. It's so satisfying.
It really is, I gotta say, definitely, because it's like, it's such a, like you said, it's a sight, basically. You're like, oh my God, this is actually happening, kind of thing. But after all this, let's talk about what happens when they actually find Beta, because they find something more sinister waiting for them. Let's talk about that.
Yes, so unfortunately, it's like it's the final battle, and somehow the stakes just managed to crawl higher and higher, which you would think would be impossible, because it's like this is kind of like, their end game. Like this is everything they've been working towards and leading up to and all of that. But poor Aloy just can't catch a break. So Beta his like, I don't know if she's like discovered or if it's just kind of like something because like they're in Farzian territory that like they stumble upon. But when they find Beta, she's in like this big kind of ornate room, and they get to her after Eric is killed. And you know, just shout out to Zoe for delivering the final blow. That was awesome. And a lot of the other, you know, Zeniths who survived, you know, the Pharaoh Plague and who have made it to this spaceship and then now to Earth, who fight with, you know, Gerard and Eric and Verbena and all of them, most Zeniths have been neutralized. And so at this point, by the time they find Beta, they're in this like big room with like this weird sort of hologram type thing. That is revealed. And so we find out that this is Nemesis, which is like this entity. And Tilda confesses that Nemesis is like a living consciousness because again, rich people apparently have way too much time on their hands and way too much energy. So instead of like investing their money in something youthful, like I don't know, saving the world, they all found ways to like collectively upload their consciousness into like some sort of thing, for lack of a better term. And it's like Nemesis is essentially like the minds and like I guess creative consciousness of like all these different Zenith people, and it's essentially just been left to fester for so long,
And
and
let's
now it
talk
hits
about
them.
the
And
implication. Because we know, so let's talk about the Far Zeniths for a second, because these idiots have been floating around in space, and any place that they inhabited was blown up by this thing, this consciousness or whatever it was. And if and basically, because these guys were heading to Earth, this consciousness or thing basically sent the signal that woke Hades, that caused the entire chain of events that happened in Zero Dawn. So let's talk about all of that and what it means for them now, literally. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, Tilda reveals a lot. None of it good. But yeah, I mean, she explains what Nemesis is. And I just, again, I'm just like, did nobody learn from Ted Farrow and his plague? Like, that's, you know, a huge mistake right there. But essentially, the Far Zenith people have like repeated that mistake by uploading their consciousness into this thing and then making Nemesis because like they just left it. Or I mean, I don't even know. But like Tilda
Exactly,
describes it as
dude.
like being lonely and like all this stuff. And it's just like, did you guys not learn anything from watching Ted? Like, what was going on? Like, why? But whatever the case, like they've created this monster and left it to like fester or whatever. And now it
Fester,
hates them. And it's hell-bent
it's
on
literally
destroying them to the
after
point
them.
where, yeah, like Nemesis was what destroyed Sirius, which was like the planet or colony that the Zenith people were on. And like you said too, Nemesis was the one that sent the signal that woke Hades with like the hope, I guess, of like Hades being able to destroy Earth and like forcing the Zeniths to not have a place to go. So at this point, we realized that like initially the assumption was that the Zeniths wanted to resettle on Earth and like re-terraform it, make it in their image or however they want, like to their specifications, because their own planet had been destroyed by like some sort of like force or whatever. But now they learned that like their intention was never to settle on Earth because they couldn't go to any known planet where Nemesis might find them, because Nemesis, being like their memories or like their consciousness, has access to like everything that these guys have access to. So like nothing really that any Far Zenith person had or knew was like not known by Nemesis, supposedly. So their goal was just to hit like some random planet, in some
Completely in
random
some faraway
location.
galaxy or something. Oh my God.
And like in a place where Nemesis couldn't find them, and then re-terraform that so that it was habitable and they could live there. Then we get to like the weirder part of this whole reveal, which is that Tilda, like you point out at a couple of different points during the game, that she had and Liz had a thing. Like they dated for a bit, and then Tilda describes it, I think, as like she being more serious and Liz being less serious and like less into their relationship after some time
I
had progressed.
guess.
So they broke up and you know, never got
Are
back
you not
together.
sure
But
it wasn't
Liz,
you, Tilda? Are you not sure it wasn't you?
I know, right? I think Liz passing really kind of affected Tilda to the point that now she's like conflating, I guess, her love of Elizabeth with her desire to like get Aloy, which is very, very weird and all sorts of awkward. Yeah,
dude,
but
for real, right?
Also, can we just talk about timing? Because Tilda has like the worst timing for so many things. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, like at this point, Tilda, in a move that I think surprises very few, kind of reveals that like she's not, she kind of like
we know she's sketchy.
Becomes the new,
we know she's sketchy.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, but like she turns on Aloy and she's like, all right, so this is great, you're here. Cool, now you're coming with me. And her whole reasoning is that she loved Elizabeth, she couldn't save Elizabeth, so now she's going to take Aloy in her place because Aloy is the best version of Elizabeth. And I'm like, again, timing, lady. Beta is right there, she's a human being, she has feelings,
exactly.
I'm like, that is such a rude thing to say, because again,
to anybody,
and she's not an inferior copy, and if you feel that way, that's probably because you've conditioned her to think that way, and you've probably abused her physically, mentally, emotionally, whatever. That seems all just kind of sad, because I think you do get to see like Beta's reaction to that, and I think like that there's like a part of her that's still hesitant to believe Aloy and believe that she doesn't have a defect, because she doesn't have the skill that Aloy has with like, you know, fighting or like weaponry or, you know, any of that. She's just very like knowledgeable and very, very smart and all of that. And she's very good with tech, and she knows quite a lot just by being exposed to like the Zeniths. Chatter,
exactly.
whatever
you want to call it.
Yeah, but like just because she's different doesn't make her inferior or superior or whatever. But I like that Tilda was just like, yeah, now's the time. I'm going to put her down and build Aloy up. And it's just like, lady, priorities.
Stop.
But
just stop. Again, and you think like, that would convince Aloy to even listen to you? Like, really?
Like, yeah.
Like, no.
And again, in a move that surprises nobody, Tilda's like, all right, well, you're not coming with me, but I'm just going to take you by force. And so she and Aloy fight, which is, you know, like that's the final boss fight. You have to fight Tilda in a Spectre Prime.
In some weird
Prime.
Spectre Prime kind of thing. Exactly.
Yeah, kind of like a Voltron getup.
Right?
But like, not as cool. But yeah, you have to fight Tilda. Obviously you win. And when you win, you kind of get another reveal, which is that Silens learned all of this information from Hades directly when he was like busy extracting information. And so he's kind of been like the person behind the curtain pulling strings, because a lot of this was his plan. And his only
goal was to get away.
So like, he had known about Nemesis, he had known about, you know, all these other things, and his goal was to steal the Odyssey and Apollo and Gaia and then like make his own planet. And I think in a move that maybe does shock people, because it shocked me, Silens
right
an ounce of emotion. And yeah, a really tiny bit. But that's also, as much as I hate Silens, it makes her like kind of a sweet scene, because like initially when he reveals this, Aloy is like upset, and she asks him like, why don't you just stay, help me fight that thing? And he's like, no, I'm going. And then Aloy's just kind of resigned. She's like, all right, fine, good riddance, whatever. And there's this really sweet moment where like she regroups with her friends and like they exchange hugs and stuff.
And everything. It's a very sweet moment.
He's like midway up onto the gangplank to get onto the ship, and then he's like looking back at them and he's like, all right, fine.
I know.
And he does say that he'll stay and help them, because they're gonna need all the help they can get. But I just love how Aloy is like, all right, you displayed an ounce of emotion, are you okay? Like that type of thing. She calls him out on it. But for the present, Silens is now joining them. Or he's at least refusing to leave, or not so much refusing as I guess he's elected to stay. Doesn't have plans to leave for the near future, but you know, nine sounds that could always change.
And now let's look at how the segues into a cooler sequel for this game, right? Because now we know Nemesis is the big bad. Right. And what is the plan to fight that? What are we going to do? Because now, thankfully, Beta and Aloy have Gaia and all the sub-functions except for Hephaestus and Hades, which is cool.
Yeah, well, not all of them, but most of, or a good majority except of the ones that were, they were able to. Except for Hades,
they have all of them.
I don't think they have Aletheia, because I think Aletheia's dormant. They don't have Artemis or Apollo or whatever.
They have Artemis or Apollo. Now, at the end, because they got it from the Zenith base. They got them.
But were they properly merged? Did I just miss that? Maybe I did.
No, it was there. At the end, you see the screen with all the sub-functions except for Hephaestus and Hades.
Oh, yeah, because Hephaestus has been released and Hades is, like, deleted.
Yeah,
Hades pretty much. Back. although, I kind of do feel a little bit bad because seeing Travis Tate was, like, a highlight. He was an experience. It was, like, nice Agreed. To be little, like, moments where he popped up. But, no, I think you're right. I think I'm just confusing things and not remembering.
No, but let's talk about how this segues into a good third game, right? Because there's so much to expect from this. And I don't blame Guerrilla for this. I blame PlayStation and Sony for making these exclusives, because that makes me more mad than anything else, honestly. But other than that, it would be really cool to see a third game for this, because I'd love to spend more time with Aloy. And I'd like to see how their world deals with finding out about this new threat, especially the Nora. I'd like to find out about their reaction to all of this, to be honest with you. And poor Aloy, deserves a break. She needs a nap.
She needs like a 3,000 year nap. I'd be interested to see too. Mm-hmm. But also, I think they're kind of, it looks like they're setting something like that up, because the final mm-hmm. scene in the game is like the different members of Aloy's alliance or like group or whatever riding off to different corners of the world, because they're going to need as much help as they can get for Nemesis. Everybody's now kind of like undertaking this mission of like going out into the world and informing people.
I would like to
see that. But also, I would like to see Aloy tell Sona about Barl, as hard as it's going to be.
Heartbreaking.
But also about Zoe and her having a baby, because Sona's never met Zoe. Sona doesn't know she has a granddaughter, and I don't know how quickly word travels.
For Sona, because she's lost both her kids now.
It's so sad, because she's usually, it's not the parents that are supposed to outlive the kid, it's usually the other way around, and she lost both of them so young. Like, Varl couldn't have been more than like what, 27 28, I'm guessing,
at
like,
certainly most.
Not over 30.
So
it was, you know, a really moving thing, like moving in a sense. It was like really sad when Varl died, and Sona didn't, like, she wouldn't have known, because he was thousands of miles away perhaps, and she just, you know, no cell phone, so it's like anybody would have called her and told her. So somebody's gonna have to go and tell her, and I don't begrudge them that, but I think it would also just be very moving to see Aloy do that, and I feel like it has the potential to be like a real real poignant scene that probably makes us all cry.
For sure. And that kid is going to be surrounded by the best people ever. It's going to be so cool. I cannot wait. I'd love to see that at some point.
Aloy to spoil the kitten. Because she says she's not good with kids. But the few times you see her interact, it's like, no, lady, you're fine.
You're fine. You're good. You know? Oh, such cool things happening in this game. Especially the few cutscenes, right? Especially a few with Eren, where you talk about how Ursa actually escaped with Avad and all those things. Such cool things happening there. And the machines, oh my god, like, such crazy machines. I think we can talk about this in more detail in another podcast for sure. But for now, this is where we leave you guys. This has been a little longer than our usual podcast, but if you've stuck with us throughout all of this, thank you. We really, really appreciate you. And we will see you next week with something super exciting, as always. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
As always, our lovely theme song is Water Lily by the 126ers. The Nerdy Podcasts podcast is available on Anchor, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and you can follow us online at nerdy-podcasts.tumblr.com or at nerdypodcasts.wordpress.com.